Dijk, member of the committee.
My name is Pieter van Dalen, also a member of the committee.
Gerard Koornhof, ANC member of the committee.
Member of the committee, ANC. Fatima Hajjaj, member of the committee.
From DPE, I'm a financial analyst.
Semandiwan from DPE.
I see there's somebody else from DPE also on this side. Maybe introduce yourself.
Andrew Shaw, Department of Public Enterprises.
Vera Creel, from Corporate Strategy, SIA.
Alison Cook, SIA Procurement and Petroleum Affairs. From the Ministry, Acting Head, Corporate Communications, SIA.
Fran du Plessis, previously a director of SIA and chair of the Audit Committee.
Koji Patel, CFO.
Chris Smart, Acting CEO.
I'm Jake Carroll, retired chairperson of SIA Board.
And I am Cheryl Carola, and the new baby trying to run along in the footsteps of Prof.
Tisang, which remain at the committee secretary of the committee.
Eric Postcard, researcher for the portfolio committee.
You see this? This meeting here, I can now understand why the chairperson left. Everything is going. Really, the first question was about gender representativity. It's the opposite here now. We are the minority. It usually starts in the way that you start off from the head introducing themselves, and I see from here it's bottom up. It starts. So, you can see the change in style is takeover here.
And he only realized now, isn't that for a long time?
Now I understand why I'm chairing also. No, that's good. Maybe we would start, are you all going to, presentations from your side first, or opening remarks, and just I'll be guided by you all how you're going to make your presentation from your side. Usually you are given the floor first, and after your presentation, the committee members would be asked to engage. So I'd like to give the floor to you, Professor, if you're leading the team, and then we will take it from there.
Not working.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson Mentor, I also didn't prepare to open this. I am the retired chairperson, so I'm really have no official function, and Ms. Carolas will really lead the team. Let me just use this opportunity to say to the Portfolio Committee, thank you very much for the honor to have been chairing South African Airways for 5 years. It's not the easiest job in the country, but it was a great privilege to do that. And as we will present today, it has really been, and I want to leave this message, that we have a great airline. We've worked on different strategies of turning it around. It's always a case of realigning, re-strategizing, and I'm happy to say that I think we're at a point where the airline has in fact turned around due to the restructuring. The question in all businesses, but particularly in the aviation business, how sustainable is it? And I think we're going to talk about that too. But it is a great honor to also say congratulations to Cheryl, and good luck. I think we've got a great airline, and we've got every opportunity to make it a sustainable one into the future. But I hand over to Cheryl. Chair, thanks.
Thank you very much. I should just also say to Jakes publicly, to Professor Harold, that I feel quite honored to have been asked to serve what is effectively a world-class airline, an airline that wins international awards year after year, an airline that's gone through quite a few challenges over the last while, not least of all by the current global circumstances. And I must say I'm very relieved, Prof, that I have come in at a time when you have led the ship around the corner. We know turning big ships around is often very challenging. And so I feel greatly relieved that I wasn't there at the time that you were the chair. I must also say to the portfolio committee that the board was only just constituted yesterday. We met for the first time. And so we've only just started the process of the handover. But we have been greatly supported by the outgoing board. As you can see, they have turned up in both the chair and the chair of the audit committee today, and that's a very smooth process. DPE has also been very helpful in terms of hand-holding us and making sure that we understand how our feet will be held to the fire. I just want to say that I think Prof has said, and I'm sure the committee is aware of the fact, that the airline is facing a number of challenges, that there's the global context, but I think there we are turning the corner. I'm also pleased that the airline is going through the process of just completing the restructuring thing, which has resulted in the turnaround that we've seen. Process is not complete, but I think in the presentation that will be addressed, just what the next steps are there. We also know that some systemic weaknesses have been picked up, and here I must say, as the chair of the incoming chair of the board, I'm very happy with the procedures which were initiated by the outgoing board, namely the what we anecdotally refer to as the KPMG process, where a thorough, objective, external investigation into the systems and processes in SAA is being looked at, and where all the weaknesses in the systemic weaknesses will be identified. And I can just reassure the portfolio committee that the board is quite committed to, in fact, make sure that we have the right skills at our disposal, and I think the minister has applied a mind to that extent to address those weaknesses. But it will be a thorough process, and we certainly see the portfolio committee as a critical stakeholder in that process to, in fact, help us. And the fact that we're a new board, it obviously means we come in with a fresh take on it. So we will be engaging quite proactively with the portfolio committee as well in that process, because you represent the public, who, in fact, is the owner of this airline of ours. So we hope that the investigation will be complete by the end of the year, by the end of December. There's still a few outstanding processes now and interviews which are being conducted. I have been updated fully about this on Sunday, and so we hope that it will be concluded. Obviously, it's now a question of just doing the final interview. We've also been engaging with the auditors who have picked up some of the weaknesses in terms of the PFMA, which I think the chairperson of the previous board had highlighted during the results presentation. And to say, obviously, there, we're working very closely with the outgoing audit committee and the board to, in fact, correct those together with Deloitte, who are our internal auditors. We will, of course, keep Parliament fully appraised of that as well. The other area which we are treating as an absolute priority is, at the moment, the ship is rudderless. We do not have a CEO. And that process was initiated by the previous board, and the new board is comfortable with that. And we will now, as soon as possible, conclude that, because we don't think it's a healthy situation to not have a good person. We are happy that the process which has evolved is looking for someone who's very skilled in the sector itself, someone who will be accountable to the board and ultimately to the shareholder and to the public of South Africa, and we are determined to do that. It's particularly important because we believe that this airline has a great future. We are determined to fix some of the weaknesses that have been identified, and as I said, Parliament obviously is a key stakeholder in that process, and that's why it's necessary that our engagement with you must be robust, and we really hope that today we'll have a good conversation. But on the whole, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, sort of retreated Chair, I want to say that we are very, very upbeat about the future of the airline. Not least of all because we're turning the corner to profitability, but we want to remind people that this is an airline that year on year, even through the difficulties and through the difficult economic times, has and continues to win international awards in a very competitive sector. And so for us, we believe that whilst there might be challenges, which I think we must fix, we still believe that there's an excellent base. We have a world-class airline with fantastic people working in it, making this airline as good as what it is. The public purse has capitalized this airline to world-class standards, where we win award for our infrastructure that we have. And we want to build on this. Next year is 2010. So the focus of the incoming board, in fact, is to build on the work that had been done to make the airline a key player in 2010. We will be ready to, in fact, welcome the world and to be a key player in our team South Africa to make sure that we maximize the opportunities to grow the airline through our arrivals next year, but also to grow destination South Africa for both leisure and for business travel. So thank you, MC, and I want to say that myself and our new board really look forward to working very well with the committee, and that is with all parties, and we certainly hope that we will work together in a way that will build this airline and make it what it should be and take it to the next level. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Just before the presentation, we just like to we gave a little time because so we didn't introduce the apologies. Mr. Khanana, Honorable Khanana said he will be late, but he is here in time for the presentation. We have three apologies. Honorable Kololo, who cannot attend, and we've got Honorable Magena and Honorable Kraling, who have got other commitments with other committees. They may, if their committees finish early, join us again. So the rest of the members are here, so I just wanted to keep that in. Thank you.
Chairperson, can I just say my surname is Nana, not Khanana? I won't comment.
That's why.
But I apologize.
And I'll hand over to the CEO to start.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Ms. Kurul. Thank you very much for passing over. Just I'd like to start by wishing, on behalf of SAA, wishing you our condolences and sharing your loss with you. We're sorry to hear about that. And before I begin my presentation, I'd like to just express a word of thanks to Professor Gerbel, who's been a tremendous support, a wise and calming influence over us over the last 6 months, or my 6 months looking after the organization. I'm eternally grateful for the support he's given us. I'd also like to welcome Ms. Kurulis as our new chair. It is an exciting time, and I thank you for those words. SAA, I think, has been through a particularly tough 2.5 years. 2 years ago, we were an airline that was bloated. We were an airline that was not healthy. It was a bit unhappy. We had labor difficulties. We had poor relationships throughout the airline. We commenced with a restructuring initiative controlled by international consultants called Seabury 2 years ago, and it's been a remarkable success. I say that when I announced the profit 2 weeks ago, I did so with my heart in my mouth because it is uncertain. It was better than we thought it would be, and one always wonders if it's going to be repeated and if it's going to be sustainable. But I'm confident that it is. I'm confident for two reasons. One is I know the pain the airline went through and the deep fundamental restructuring that we achieved. And two, I'm happy that that restructuring, which is independently measured, is now reflected almost exactly in the profitability turnaround in the numbers. So if I can just launch into the presentation then. The presentation will be divided into three particular areas. One is a quick look at the industry, the strategic and operational overview of the airline, to give you some of the bedrock, the underlying causal factors that resulted in this airline becoming profitable. And then I'll hand over to my colleague, the CFO, Koshi Patel, to go through the numbers. And then I'll take over again and just look at the conclusion, the way forward, discuss 2010 a little bit, and give you a sense of where we see the airline going in the future. Okay, if I can just draw a picture of the context in which the airline finds itself. The whole world entered into a downturn initiated by, I guess, greed around the financial industry. but it's spread throughout every aspect, more so in the aviation industries and the automobile industries than most. Airlines have taken a severe thrashing over the last 12 months, and specifically over the last 9 months because of the downturn. But not only because of the downturn, because coupled with that was the oil price going through to $147 per barrel and then dropping again to $40, after which most airlines had hedged to try and prevent losses from that would have been incurred if it had gone to $200. So the oil price has wreaked havoc to our industry, and that coupled with the downturn has made it a very difficult time for all of us. Giovanni Bisignani, who is the CEO of IATA, said at the IATA annual general meeting in Malaysia that the airline industry would see losses of about $11 billion. He's since revised that. Now they're estimating losses of $15 billion, or close to 120 billion rand in 2009. That is the biggest loss this industry has ever seen in the history of aviation. It is going to cause enormous losses. 50 or more airlines have closed in the last 12 months already. Many, many more will still close. Those that survive will be those that have gone through severe cost-cutting, severe restructuring, and those who will survive will be those that have leaned and meaned themselves down to organizations that are strong and ready to meet the challenges of the future. And SAA, I think, has achieved that. We'll show you quickly what we've done over the last 2 years. The restructuring program over the last 2 years consisted of three categories of initiatives. Without going into too much detail, they were divided into global initiatives, and I think we've all been through this before. They consisted of reducing headcount, varying from a headcount cut of 33 1/3% at the top, 200 out of 600 managers, down to headcounts across the board, a total of which amounted to 20% of the workforce cut. So it was a deep-reaching from the top to the bottom reduction in headcount. We grounded our old ladies, the 747s, which have served us exceptionally well. They really were an icon of the airline, and we were very sorry to see them go. But because of the way they were financed years back, and they no longer became profitable, and there was no prospect of making them profitable in the future. So they exited the airline, although two of them are still doing ad hoc flying for us. We looked throughout our operational performance levels, and we found that operational performance was poor, was way behind the rest of the industry. We have turned that around now. You'll see later on that SAA now is the most on-time airline in the country, despite the fact that it's a network carrier, which makes it more difficult to achieve. On the revenue side, we attacked two particular initiatives. One was to increase the amount of revenue per flight. And that is coupled with two particular inputs. One is the number of passengers on board, and the second one is ensuring you get the higher-paying passengers as far as you possibly can. And that together generates the highest amount of revenue you can do. And you'll see that's been remarkably successful. The numbers will tell you that. And the second thing was to try and find out why South African Airways had a smaller share of the South African market than is typically found in national carriers throughout the world. For example, we have less of the South African market than Qantas has of the Australian market, than Lufthansa has of the German market, and Air France has of the French market, and so on. And there has to be a reason for that. So we investigated that, and we found reasons for it, and largely we've corrected that. We've turned that around. Not in all cases. They are still difficult areas, but they remain challenges and opportunities for us going forward. In other words, we see it as further improvements, further additions to profitability if we manage to sort them out. And on the departmental side, we looked at every single cost line we could, and we cut out of cost lines left, right, and center. We looked at duplication. We removed duplication. There was a number of areas where we did two different departments did the same thing. We've reduced that. We looked at performance measurement so that everybody was bound to a performance contract and had to deliver that. They were measured and made accountable. We looked at every contract we have with every supplier, and we brought that down. We renegotiated contracts that were out of line. For example, in Dakar, we take four wide bodies through a day, which makes us probably the biggest player in Dakar. We were paying the highest rate for Dakar handling. We're now paying the lowest. The result was that we were able to deliver 2.5 billion rands worth of savings, and I think I'd like to pause at the moment to try and emphasize how important this is. We achieved the target of 2.3 and bettered that. Now, some of you may know that I worked for Kenya Airways as CFO for 3 years, where we went through a similar restructuring. There, the targets were not achieved. targets, we ended about 90% of the targets. The share price at Kenya Airways went from 6 shillings to about 120 shillings in that period. In other words, it was a resounding success. The reality is that it is very seldom that any Seabury or McKinsey-led targets are actually achieved because they're set at a level that is an extreme stretch. So for SA to achieve these targets, I think it was way beyond our expectations. And it's due to the entire company's efforts. They bought into the project, and they gave their hearts to it, and it was achieved. I think if I look at the overview then, we were extremely fortunate to have taken this project on and to have initiated it in 2007 when the industry was booming, when the airline industry was seeing some of the best years it's seen in 10 years. That gave us the forgiveness, if you want, to go through a particularly tough period without being wiped out. Had we not done that in 2007, had we waited until now, I have no doubt that we would have ceased to exist. So it was exceptionally lucky, good, it's a strategic foresight at the time to have done that restructuring when it was the easiest time to do it. But if we look at the restructuring, it's not just a single project. We just finished the first phase. The way we see it is phase one, which was the hard phase, hard as in difficult, but hard as in the more down-to-earth elements of it, the headcount reductions, the improved revenue issues, the system issues, the cost reductions. We now enter into a more soft phase, which is about customer service improvement. It's about looking at the customer, looking at what the customer wants, and making sure we deliver that. It's about reducing things that upset people, like lateness, like connections missed, like overbooking, denied boardings. And other areas where performance is not up to scratch, pilferage of baggage and so on. And that's what we will be concentrating on going forward, to improve those efficiencies, to improve the softer issues, to draw the customers back to help us grow, because growth is the key to any airline's survival. The success of this restructuring, I think, is borne out by the numbers. I said that early on. Often one does restructuring, one measures each initiative, and then when you have a look at the bottom line, it doesn't really change because other things have affected it or because the measurements are in isolation. I'm very proud to be able to show you that, in fact, we do reconcile. And lastly, the restructuring has now become a part of our operations, and I think this is key. In order to achieve sustainability, because that is what is important, it's very easy to restructure and then sit back and watch all the things you put in place snap back to the way they were before, because you don't watch them and you don't make sure they stay embedded in the organization. This is the key difference between what we've done now and what we've done numerous times before, is that everything was looked at from a sustainability point of view to make sure that it wouldn't snap back. So we have measures in play that will prevent the rehiring of all the people that we dismissed or that we separated with. We have measures to ensure that we don't allow contracts to slip out. We have measures to ensure that everything we have achieved does remain there. It's become part of the culture, and we are confident that restructuring is sustainable going forward. One of the areas which I wanted to show you was how we have improved our on-time performance. On-time performance is a measure of how many of your flights left from a domestic perspective within 9 minutes of the scheduled departure time, and from an international perspective within 15 minutes of departure time. And you'll see there, if you look at that graph, the light blue and light green lines were 2006-2007, which bumbled around the 75% mark and then progressively declined over Christmas to about 60%. Last, 2007, which when we started the restructuring, it hit an all-time low in March of 54% on time. In other words, one in two flights left more than 15 or 9 minutes late. We then took on this as a major project, and we managed to improve it month by month until it reached about 85% at its height in October. But more importantly, we managed to stop the perennial or the constant year-end decline. You'll see how the decline happens each year. We kept that flat for the year, and then we continued to do it. And this year, it's been above 80% for most of the year, and currently it's at an all-time high of 90% in this month, or last month at least. So that's one of the areas where you can see the restructuring initiatives actually achieve tangible, measurable results. This is over a seven-year period. You'll see that in the first 4 or 5 years, we sort of settled around 85%, which is international average. We dropped in the last 4 or 5 years because we took on Africa as an initiative. Africa is a very difficult destination to operate because of problems at various African airports that aren't quite as efficient as they are internationally, and because African travelers tend to carry a tremendous amount of baggage because we carry a large number of traders who come to South Africa to buy goods to go back. So the operation is a difficult operation, but we've learned the lesson, and we're now operating with those people at levels that beat the previous 5-7 years. Okay, operational statistics. This is the underlying non-financial numbers that tell you a bit about where our financial performance came from. You'll see on the top line capacity or ASKs. ASKs is the measure of one seat carried for 1 kilometer. So it's a measure, it sort of takes into account the distance you travel and the number of seats you carry. We progressively declined, 3% in 2007 to 2008, and 8% last year, largely because we grounded the 747s without replacing any aircraft. So that's a simple attribution to grounding aircraft. The grounding aircraft have allowed us to reduce the cost of the most expensive seats that we fly. The uptake, this is the number of people we carry. RPK refers to revenue passenger kilometers, so that is a measure of a person flown for 1 kilometer. And that you'll see is also declined, 3% in line with capacity reduction in 2008. But this year we started to see the economic impact hit hard, and we've seen an 11% reduction in passengers. When your reduction in passengers is greater than your reduction in seats, you'll see a decline in your load factors or your occupation, if you want to use a hotel term, and you'll see we drop from 75% to 73%. So far, doom and gloom. Passengers carried also down by 7%. Cargo down by 26%. I can tell you that in the world, cargo is down by around 35% internationally. So we're less affected, but we are affected dramatically. The key in this, and this is where I go back to the restructuring, when I've talked about the increase in amount of revenue per flight. One of the important initiatives was to change that around, and you can see how that has come home. 20% increase in average recovery per passenger kilometer last year, another 18%. So it's a 40% rise per passenger kilometer in 2-year period. And I would say this without increasing prices. So what we've managed to do is attract the right passengers. Typically, if airlines get this wrong, they fill the aircraft up with early passengers to make sure they have a full load, and they get the passengers that are flying the cheaper Apex fares. And when the business traffic comes along at the end to book late, the plane is full. We've managed that process by closing and opening price buckets to ensure that we attract the right kind of passenger, the passenger that gives us the best yield. And that's what saved us this year. If you look at the financial performance, you'll see on the turnover line that we've increased solidly, 8% the previous year, and into this year, despite a sharp fall in passengers, we still managed to increase turnover by close to 20%. And you can see most of it is coming from passenger revenue. 11% last year, 20% this year. Cargo revenue has declined because of the huge reduction. We were 26% in tonnage. Despite increased recoveries, it still hasn't turned around the drop in revenue. Other turnover, the major increase there is the fact that we're able to secure Comair as a customer in our technical division, and they've increased their turnover by about 80%, and that is the driver of other turnover. On the operating cost line, you'll see that operating costs went up by 5% last year and 10% this year. How, one asks, if we managed to do a radical turnaround in a restructuring? And the answer is simply because of energy. You know, that is out of our control. It's very difficult to reduce the consumption of energy. Aircraft are run as efficiently as possible, so you simply can't reduce it unless you fly less. And the rising oil price from around $40 in 2005 up to $147 in 2009, then back to $40, is reflected in those numbers, $5.7 billion up to $8.6 billion. $2.9 billion rand increase in energy costs over 2 years. It's a huge number. The rest was held stable, 1% and then 2%. And the fact that in that time period, we saw a 27% drop in the rand. The rand went from 692 to about 884 in that period. Tells you that because so many of our costs are foreign-driven, tells you that the real figures there are a drop of around about 9 to 10%, which is where you would expect it to be with the restructuring. So the 1 to 2% increase is largely driven by currency declines. Operating profit line, this is the operating profit that occurred from pure operations without looking into any of the once-off items and without considering any of the financing costs. And that's where the turnaround is shown. 650 lost last year to 1.9 billion profit. And there is your 2.5 billion swing. Because remember that the restructuring occurred all in the operating profit lines. If you bring in interest, hedge premiums, and all other financial costs, the what I call the normalized profit, which is the profit, if you want, almost like a headline profit, before taking into account things like hedging losses and other one-off items, we turned it from a billion loss to 1.5 billion profit. I would say there is a slight accounting adjustment side there of about 200 million, so it's about 1.3 billion without the adjustment. Hedging profits, my colleague will talk a bit more about it later on, but hedging profits are a factor, unfortunately, in any airline, especially when the fuel price moves around. They've moved from, more or less break even, to a loss this year of 1 billion. And then the other big item that affected us was the restructuring costs, 1.3 billion last year, and continued restructuring costs this year because the 747s are still with us, of just under half a billion, will give us our current year profit of about a break-even point or 10 million loss, which is, again in itself is a huge turnaround. From 800 million last year, $800 million 2 years ago to a billion last year loss. This year we had break-even, and that is a true attributable profit for this year. We did have an item which is really related to prior years because we were able to resolve the Airbus issue, because we were able to sign a deal with Airbus, we were able to re-recognize deposits which we had written off in 2004 when the airline attempted to cancel the Airbus deal. So that's been brought back into the balance sheet, and obviously when you bring it back into the balance sheet, you take it through the income statement. So the accounts will show a profit of just under 400 million, although internally we consider it to be a break-even for the year. Okay, I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Kaushik Patel, to take you through the actual financial statements as they appear in the annual report.
Yeah, we're going to punish them for not bringing a pointer, because so you're going to bring a pointer next time, and you're going to buy a pointer for the committee.
No,
I happen to have a pointer. Thank you so much. But they still owe us a pointer.
And we're saved by the women.
Thank you very much, Chris. You will recall that Chris had done a presentation in terms of showing how the profits are made. From an operational perspective, what we've got here is the statutory set of accounts that I've presented up there, which is represented in this book that you all have received. So, in essence, this is the formal set of accounts that's the operational performance that really reflects how we've done it. From the perspective of revenues, you'll see now that both revenue and operating costs, Chris has already spoken to you about that. So in terms of getting it to the operational performance of 1.9 billion, Chris has given that from a operational perspective. So I'm not going to repeat a lot of that in order to make our time most efficient. You will also notice that on the fair value translation gains and losses that Chris reflected and talked about a 1.046 billion hedging loss position. So what is the difference? The difference there is effectively option premium. We have to buy these hedges, and that you have to pay a price for it. And also, at the end of the day, you also have to translate your assets and liabilities at balance sheet date to the latest rate in terms of rand and foreign currency translations that we have. And that is reflected in that figure there of 1.564 billion. In the net finance cost, you can see that it was a cost in previous years, 130 million to an income in this year. That means it's a net finance received. And this is predominantly as a result of the interest that we've earned in terms of the subordinated loans that we raised during the previous financial year. Taxation really refers to deferred taxation between timing differences between accounting and taxable calculations for tax payable. And then discontinued operations need to be separately shown. Again, a very small amount, so I'm not going to go into much detail in terms of that. That's giving you, again, as Chris indicated, a fundamental turnaround in the bottom line from a statutory perspective, what you'll see in your financials, from a 1.085 billion loss to a 398 million profit. Certainly a big turnaround from that perspective. looking at the income, we got it broken down into the different categories. Passenger revenue, Chris has spoken to you about in terms of the different categories of what drove the passenger revenues. There's a number of factors. One is the price at which we charge the customers, the fuel levies that are applicable there, and also at the same time the volume of customers that we have. And from that perspective, that was the biggest driver in terms of the total revenues increasing by 19%. IATA had indicated it about 2 months ago that basically cargo has seen in excess of 40% worldwide drop. And you can see that is what is happening to the world economy in terms of China and the rest of the world, showing a global slowdown. And as a result, cargo slows down as well. We dropped as well. We were affected by that to the extent that 26% less tonnage that we did carry. To a certain extent, also that was set off. And if you look at the 12% there, so you're saying a drop of 26% in tonnage, what gave it to a net 12%? We had a 10% increase in terms of price, and therefore the net 12% position came up. The pride and joy of our airline, and I think we are well respected worldwide, is the technical services. If you look at technical services, we grew by 89%. Now, how did this arise? If you look at the situation with regards to Comair, we grew our services in terms of technical services being provided from 20,000 hours to 39,000 hours being provided to Comair. So we do service Comair's aircraft as well, and that's reflected in that 89% over there. Going forward, with regards to moving on to operating costs, Chris has spoken to you about the energy costs. Again, on the energy cost side, you can see that there was a 28% increase. That's because the fuel price went up to $147. Let's look at the other categories, and I'm going to categorize this into a number of items per category based on the fact that they have a common denominator. You'll see that the increases, that is 6% there, 6% there, and 6% there, are primarily as a result of the weakening of the rand. And as a result, you will find that it has a currency impact in terms of those categories there. For instance, accommodation and refreshments of our pilots, they stay abroad, and henceforth the hotel costs become higher because of the foreign currency impact arising out of that. So if you take foreign currency out of all of these three items, you'll see that our actual costs actually decline rather than incline. Number of this arose out of negotiations with the various hotels and contracts that we had, bringing the prices down, and against that, the currency went against that. The lease costs went down by 25%, a significant drop, and that's because of the fact that we had the 747s going out of the asset base of our company, returned back to the lessors. We basically left with three of them, and with the downturn in the market, obviously that three haven't been sold off as yet, but they're coming to an end very close by. So we should see further reductions coming through in terms of lease costs going forward. Electronic data costs, if you look at that, 15% reduction in that cost. This is arising out of pure as part of that restructuring initiatives, where basically we renegotiated contracts with various companies to try and bring the prices down to market-related prices. They had old contracts, and we said we need to renegotiate it and get the best pricing out of it, and therefore have the savings coming through as a result of that. If we can move on to the next slide, please. Hedging, as Chris has indicated, hedging is an arsenal that is certainly required by every airline. Now, you will probably wonder, in terms of hedging, why did we incur such a big knock? In terms of downturns in markets all over the world, you're going to see a big negative impact, and in terms of upturns in the market, you're going to see a positive impact. So you will notice in Chris's slide also, he indicated there was a profit last year and there's a loss this year. We are very conservative in terms of our hedging. We hedge between 40 and 60% in terms of our fuel and 50 and 75% in terms of currency. What is important to note is that the world is at a much higher hedging level. So the likes of Cathay Pacific incurred $7.2 billion loss, Hong Kong dollars, in terms of loss from hedging as a result of that. So, again, you've got to benchmark, And from that perspective, you can see that the hedgings that we have there is 80, compared to the worldwide industry is at 80%, whereas if you look at ourselves, we're between 40 and 60%. During this year, we were at the very low end, which was the 40% level. Also, you will see that in terms of foreign currency, 50 to 75%, it's also lower than the world industry norm of 80%. Moving on to the balance sheet, we look at the balance sheet. Focus area that I would like to concentrate on is on the $439 million that is reflected there in terms of long-term loans. You can see we came down from $3.5 billion to $3 billion, and the result of that is we've been saying that this company has a lot of debt, and we need to bring a lot of that debt down. So we paid down that debt. So if you look at that $439 and link it to the cash, we've paid a lot of that debt from the cash that is there. So in essence, we've used some of our cash in terms of paying down the debt as well. What you will also find in there is the cash flow impacts in terms of the hedging side of it. So therefore, the cash flow also reduces as a result of that. Moving on to the next slide in terms of balance sheet, you will see that in the equity structure that you have the two subordinated loans being raised there. If you look at the, sorry, before I take it to the subordinated loans, if you look at the shareholder deficit, it's sitting at a negative position. So in effect, you'll recall that in 2003 when the hedging debacle happened, that the equity position had been wiped out altogether. So the net position, in effect, is a movement of $7 million. The $7 million is because of the fact that you have your profit. If you take your last year's profit, this year's profit, and you take your last year's equity, you add $398 million to that, and then you talk about a payment of a preference dividend. And the preference dividend is related to the subordinated loans. There are those two loans over there, the $1.3 billion and the $1.56 billion. It is an instrument which is a debt instrument, but it's classified as equity. This is the nature of what we have actually raised in the balance sheet. This is because of the poor balance sheet that we raised it in this format, and therefore you see that two amounts are reflecting equity position, but they actually are monies borrowed from banks, and we pay interest on that. So if you take the interest off the profit, which is classified as preference dividends, then you get this position here, which is a net movement of $7 million. With that, I'd like to say thank you and cross over back to Chris.
Thanks, Kashyap. Can you press the red button, eh? Okay, all right. If I can indulge, the committee can indulge me, I'd like to go through some of the strategic issues that I think characterize SAA, and we should refresh our memories and remind ourselves of how important this airline is to the country in whatever form it is. But it plays an enormously important role within the strategy of the country. Our mandate is to be an African airline with a global reach, and I think that's a difference from what it used to be 2-3 years ago, where we considered ourselves to be the people that took the world to Africa and Africa to the world. We've changed that mandate because we've realized that our future and our strength and our strategy must be centered around the African continent. That's where we have a strong presence. That's where we are a major player. That's where we are a developing player. And that's where we derive our profits. Roughly 20% of our turnover comes from Africa, but it generates 40% of our profits. And I think that when that decision was taken to move away from trying to play with the big boys internationally to being a big boy in Africa, it turned the airline's fortunes around in its future. If you look at the international side, we are 38% of all international arrivals, which makes us the biggest single player in OSHA. We're also a member of the Star Alliance itself, which in fact increases our reach, increases the network size that we effectively serve to something like 160 countries, almost 1,000 cities around the world, with about 17,600 flights each and every day of the year. So it's a huge network. Star Alliance is the biggest network in the world by far. And we're a member of that, a proud member of that. Within Africa, we serve about 19 cities. And bear in mind, this is where the potential for growth in our airline comes from. There are 53 countries in Africa. We serve 19. So it's another 32 countries to go. Now, they're not all going to be countries we can serve, but there's great growth potential to be had within Africa. SAA creates connectivity between South Africa and the rest of the world, and I think I'll talk further on about that, where that really does impact on SAA, on the South African economy as a whole. In domestic, together with our partners, SA Express and Airlink, we form the largest and also the most frequent, or let's say the network with the most flights per day, covering the most cities. So it's by far and large the major player within the South African context. We also move almost just over half of all cargo in South Africa, although our competitors dispute that a little bit, but I think it's about 50-50. On the employment side, we employ just under 8,000 people. In fact, if we take the full group, it's just under 10,000 people. But the important thing is the knock-on effect that the airline has on serving industries like tourism or allied industries like tourism, maintenance, travel agents, and all the industries that surround the airline as a whole. The knock-on effect is probably three times, around 30,000 people, and you can probably knock that up to 100,000 people if you take the number of people that rely on the industry that SAA is the center of. So it's a huge generator of employment and wealth. We also are a major player in the training and development of technical skills, from pilots to engineers to even some of the skills that you wouldn't think about, like revenue accounting, which is a specific industry, unique type of skill. And we train all those revenue accountants that actually serve most of the industry in SA. And we continue to consider that to be a very important part of our responsibility. Cargo is an important enabler. It's an economic enabler. We certainly allow 50% of the internal and most of the internal external movement of critical and high value goods, which allow fast and effective change in economic development and structural development. We are a big enabler of the South African brand. The very fact that our tail sits on the ground in London and sits on the ground in Munich in the daytime is in itself a sales point for the brand South Africa. Our travel agents, our country offices, as a byproduct, are selling South Africa as a brand. Our contribution to the local economy, we've spent about 7 billion rand per annum in the local economy. About 45% of access revenue from aviation, as opposed to from parking and shopping, is from us. And we pay about 2 billion local salaries. In the African context, we're a very responsible and a very aware driver of aviation safety. A lot of the airports in Africa have declined over the years because of insufficient funding to bring up to international standards. So we're assisting African airports to bring it, not because of necessarily a philanthropic goal, but simply because we need to operate safely ourselves and we need to go to those airports. We, for example, are driving an initiative called the performance-based navigation, which is switching the reliance on ground-based aids. For those of you who know anything about aviation, I'm talking about things like VORs and IAS landing systems that we have in our country, which are failing throughout Africa because of lack of maintenance, to using sky-based or satellite-based navigation. It's a bit like forgetting or stopping changing the street signs, but rather distributing GPSs. Because GPS allows you to fly or go anywhere, and that's basically what we're doing in aviation. It allows us to fly safely in any airport in the world once it's been done, rolled out. And funny enough, the pilot project is Cape Town. We're doing Cape Town now at the moment, which allows us to land without any reference to the ground, in any weather, down to the ground in Cape Town, and that's being rolled out as we speak. Liberalization of air traffic regulation in Africa, and this is where we need all the support we can find anywhere in any structure in the country. Skies are opening, and that's a good thing. Skies are opening throughout the world, allowing for more competition, allowing for airlines to fly in different countries. For example, Europe allows any nationality within Europe to fly and base themselves anywhere in any country in Europe. So you'll get Air France opening up a base in Rome, for example. Lufthansa, I know, has opened a base in La Malpensa in Milan. Likewise, in the U.S., in the northern European continent as well, but it's not happening within Africa. So where we are a small player, we are facing tremendous competition from open skies, from the major players internationally. But we're a big player, we're not getting the same advantage within Africa. So we need for Yamasutra decision to be driven hard throughout the continent. And South Africa can play a lead role there. I know the Department of Transport is doing so, and I welcome any efforts in this regard from government. The sooner we can open up the skies in Africa for African airlines, in the same way that the Europeans have opened up the European skies for European airlines, the better aviation will become, and the stronger this continent can be, because aviation is a huge enabler for any economic environment. We're the largest and widest network in Africa, which in itself allows our people, South Africans, to spread their wings within Africa. The fact that we fly to 19 of the major capitals in the continent is seen by the fact that in those capitals you will see South African presence. You'll see South African brands, you'll see South African expats in play helping those countries to grow. And that is due to a large degree because of the ability to get there and back easily. Looking ahead, this is where I get a little bit doom and gloom. The global economic downturn is undoubtedly a U, not a V. The recovery is not going to be quick. It's not going to be a rebound recovery, but it's going to be a long, hard slog recovery. It's going to take a long time. But I think the important thing to realize is that we survived the worst. Economists tell me almost unanimously now that the bottom has been reached. So if we survived thus far, and I can say that we are above budget so far, it's around the break-even point, which I think is a remarkable achievement given what the rest of the world is offering. If you look at BA, for example, they had to at one point threaten to ask everybody to work for a month without salaries. A lot of the airlines in the world are in deep trouble. We are still at a break-even point, and that's got to be attributed to the fact that we were successful in restructuring. But I think the important point is about the future. One thing is will happen. As soon as the sun will rise, this economy will turn around. And when this economy turns around, opportunities will arise. And those opportunities will be taken by those bold enough to step forward and grab them with both hands. But to be in a position to do that, we have to be ready. We have to have our plans for new destinations, our plans of where we're going to increase our frequencies, our plans of what new aircraft we're going to put into the fleet to meet that additional demand. We have to be ready for the future. And I think with the new board under Cheryl, with the ExCo team in place, we are well positioned. With our restructuring, we're well positioned to take those opportunities. And I see the future as being incredibly exciting. I think the important point, though, is we do have to not lose sight of what we've achieved in the restructuring. So we have to not look backwards, but we have to make sure that what we've done behind stays there. In other words, we've got to continue strict cost containment. We've got to build that culture into the airline. It's becoming very evident that the world is changing from being I can spend lots of money, I can spend more money than you and I'm proud of it, to I can spend less money than you and be proud of it. Thrift is now fashionable. And it's the culture that we're trying to embed in the airline. When people now drive, when we hire cars, I drive the cheapest car, I drive a Group A or Group B car and I come down to Cape Town. Before, we used to drive a Mercedes. So things like that are changing. People are proud of what they achieve, what they show and how they do things within the airline. And I think that's part of the way of making sure that cost remains contained. Efficiency improvement is still important. Part of an ongoing process. Strategic and effective procurement. Procurement becomes very important because it drives cost savings. Revenue management I've spoken about. You saw 18%, 20% increases in two consecutive years. We can do more, and we will do more. New channels of distribution. The world is changing in the way it sells tickets. In the old days, you bought paper tickets from travel agents. Now you have internet and a number of other new channels that we can exploit, and we need to be ready for those, and we need to lead that revolution in the country. And while I have to say this at every single presentation, safety is paramount over and above cost containment. So we will spend to be safe. We will not compromise safety in any way. 2010, we're ready. We will be ready. We're excited. We see there's a huge opportunity to showcase not only our airline, but to showcase aviation in Africa and to showcase our country as a whole. We work with Match, for those of you who don't know, Match is the official...
official report.
I wouldn't
say that.
Okay.
We
just... Match is the appointed accommodation and transportation provider.
Somebody is trying to hint me on. Match is the official accommodation and transportation provider to PETA, and we are signed up, we have signed up an agreement with them to operate all the additional aircraft. So the additional frequencies or capacities will come in for the World Cup will come from two areas. One is from additional aircraft bought in by Match, by 20 aircraft that we will operate for them. And then bear in mind that a lot of the return traffic at night time will happen between 9 and 4 in the morning when our planes are grounded. Obviously, our planes will fly for us tonight. So we're confident, so is the Department of Transport and ACTS are confident that there's sufficient capacity in the country to meet the demand. From an aviation perspective, we believe we are up to the challenge and move forward to it. In conclusion, I think just to summarize what I've said, profit of $398 million, despite unprecedented fuel prices, despite the hedging losses of over $1 billion, and despite the onset in the second half of the year of the worst recession since 1929. I will say that the $398 million is driven by the fact that we managed to do the deal on Airbus, but that in itself was an achievement that is attributable to this year. Restructuring initiatives, $2.5 billion against a total of $2.3 billion. And that has really been the driver behind these results. On-time performance is the best we've seen in 5 years. We are expecting to break into the 2009-2010, but there are a number of caveats. People have really must understand that we cannot see a further decline in this economy. We cannot see a huge increase in the fuel price again. We can't see a reduction in the RAND. But fortunately, the scenario planners, the scenario forecasters are saying it needs a visual likelihood. So, given that, we are confident that we're able to turn this airline through a break-even through one of the worst economic periods and then into significant growth and significant strength for which you can all be proud into the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that comprehensive presentation. I like the enthusiasm also. I think we'll have to ask our members, honorable members, to engage, and if there's any questions forthcoming, we can go with the round of questions, and we'll go from there. But in just no time, to honorable Nana, honorable Kuna. Okay.
Notre Nana. Notre Nana.
Notre Nana.
Notre Nana.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, 6, we'll come back to honorable Ajish in the end. Is the phone on? It's our private joke, don't worry.
No, you have to tell us.
No, I think it's not working. I think you have to just speak loudly.
Thanks, Jefferson. Can I just comment about the annual report, the outlook. It really looks very simple. It reflects a company that is trying to get out of trouble. I appreciate it. I mean, there's been so many fancy annual reports.
We have to record Mr. Nana's voice, so you can just stay with us. I think we are going to officially reconstitute. There has been a cell phone that has been found in the ladies' room. If anybody has lost a cell phone, you can claim it. If it's not, we're going to give it to Disang to make an announcement to try to find out who it is.
Must be a lady.
Yes.
You never know.
Why are you looking at your phone? So Disang, you will please sort that out.
Okay.
Okay, we are officially reconstituting again, and we will start with Mr. Nana with his questions. Please continue. You're going to speak just a bit louder. We're going to capture you on 2 or 3 MP3 recorders, placed strategically here, and then hopefully that from that we will get the recording.
Yeah, thanks, Jefferson. Can I be the first one to comment FAA on the outlook of the annual report? As a fact, you know, some of business owners will come with a expensive annual report, having spent so much money. It's really much appreciated. which must, it really reflects that you are a company trying to get out of this problem. I appreciate that. Having said that, Shabbatun, can I just make a confession that I was part of a lot of those people who thought that owning your own airline as a country is a waste of money. I'm a little bit getting converted. Somebody advised me to ask Brazilians how it feels not to have your own airline. And I'm saying I'm gathering few new facts around this. In the presentation by FAA chair, I may have missed it, but in the balance sheet as presented here today, I get a sense that the balance sheet is silent about the loyalty program of FAA. Because my understanding is that the loyalty program is necessary, but it remains a liability. Can I get clarity of how they missed it, or how has it been captured in the annual report and the presentation? And secondly, Mr. President, I would like to know how much is our bill in the loyalty program? How much do we spend in a financial year in the loyalty program? Thirdly, if this will not contravene any agreement between SAA and the Airbus company, can this committee be appraised of the contents of the deal that you seem to have cut? Does the deal put SAA on a much more positive footing? In other words, is it beneficial to SAA? Number four, I came across a story in the media, in one of the newspapers, that companies that operate, airline companies, are planning to increase fares before the World Cup. This worried me, Chairperson, because the nature of the story projected parasite kind of airlines that want to cash in on the 2010 project. What really worried me is the effect, the knock-off effect that it is likely to have. With the economic downturn, I suspect that this kind of a tariff hike is most likely to keep Sokolovy fans away from our World Cup. What impact? I'm worried about the impact. If FAA could comment or validate or dismiss the story. And lastly, sir, I always like to remind people that I'm from a rural area in the Eastern Cape. Myself, I only started to learn to swim a few years back. It's unlike my kids, that are only 7 years, that are only 4, all of them are going to a swimming school. Because they're staying in an urban area. But where I am coming from, there are no such facilities where people will be taught to swim. And I have been reliably advised that one of the criteria that our airlines are using in employing their cabin crew is that before you could even be interviewed, you are taken to a swimming pool, thrown in there, so that you can swim. Shepherdson, if that is true, again, I want to say it to Malibu, if that is true, I believe that that criteria is discriminatory in nature and in content, because not everyone of our young people, particularly those from rural areas, have been exposed to swimming lessons. Naturally, if that is one of the criteria, you are dismissing others, having not even tested them on their other fields of expertise.
Thank you. Honorable Kunal.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to commend the leadership of SFA for the format of this report. It's cost-saving. You can see you're trying to save cost on this. There's no larger than life-size photos of the board and your leadership. Photographs. I think it's a practical example that you're trying to save cost. So I think we need to compliment you for the important photographs. The downside is, of course, and I believe it's because you don't as yet have shareholders' contact. Yet, we can't easily see what you've achieved against your target. It's very good, well-written support for financial statements, but we can't measure it against achievement, your target, in column format or table format. So that's probably the reason, I'm not disputing that, but that will make it easier for oversight to have the report, giving your target against achievement. Also, in this report, you really have to look very closely and seeking for your failure and your things that you didn't achieve. Whereas if you have a compact agreement, you would probably, with a glance, immediately would see the weaknesses and where you failed, you did not achieve your targets. It will just make it easier for oversight once we go to that stage. Also highlight not only your achievements but also your failures or your weaknesses. That's just the first comment that I want to make. Secondly, I agree with you, Ms. when you say technically or strictly speaking, you broke even in the current year. Not strictly speaking, up in a temporary with a 398 million saving, because you need to take into consideration your 408 million of your Airbus. So strictly speaking, you can give, if I understand correctly, then I agree with that. Because that other Airbus deal of 408 million has to go through your income statement. So your profit is strictly speaking, then that's that breaking point. Can I go to your page? There was a report recently in the media that you want to sell your technical service. It's a technical, as well as your cargo, as well as your asset. And then you would have reported in the media to say, no, you will only sell 49% of the technical. Can you just comment on that? Because in my books, technical is your core business. This is your maintenance of your aircraft. And it's a mistake like the military made in this country a few years ago to sell some of their core businesses, only to realize later it's not a non-core business that they sold or sourced out. It's a core business. And then it's a huge cost had to source it back again. So I just want to make sure what we understand the facts of the matter, whether you intend to sell technical. You reported 684 million turnover, and an increase in 89% profit. Turnover, which is very healthy situation. Why do we want to sell this if it's such a healthy situation? So if you can comment on technical, I don't want to go into issues, but you can just comment on that. Then on page 11 of your report, your annual report, we talk about non-core immovable assets you want to sell. Can you inform the committee which are these assets? Where are they located? To which departments or sectors do you intend to be to transfer these non-core assets? We would be interested to know about that. In the year under review, you reduced your workforce by 2,000 people from 9,000 to 7,000.
No, it's about 10,000 to 7,000.
You reduced your costs, which can be complemented. But then it was reported that your previous CEO got a payment of 14 million. And against that, you also negotiated with the union, reportedly, that there should be a wage freeze. How did you consolidate that you, in this time, the difference that you had your previous CEO suspended, then it was reversed to a firing, suspension, not a suspension, release of the contract, and then afterwards reported now in the media a 14 million grant payoff. In this time and period that we live in, how do you justify that situation? My last question in the also your bonuses payments. You mentioned, and I think we should welcome that, a very simple example that you mentioned, but extremely important. If you fly, you're going to come to this meeting from the Cape Town International Airport, and you take an A-section car instead of a Mercedes-Benz or a luxury car, I think that's a commitment from the board side to say, yes, we're serious about cutting costs. But what do you say then about your bonus scheme? The bonus scheme is being reported. Your previous CEO, here before us in Cope, and there we determined that he served on 38 balls. If you go to Cypre, you can see it. Those are things that doesn't sound well. If you look at your presentation today and the future outlook, these are the weaknesses that I think you can just explain to us what is happening. And my last question is Mango. Your investment in Mango is 505 million. And they made a profit of 10 million under the period under review, if I remember correctly. What is the future of Mango? How do you view the Mango, the operation? And lastly, the tickets of Mango. Where do you buy the tickets? Where do you sell the tickets? Because I need to look at your board of directors as well, the Mango.
Chairperson, thank you. Sorry that I'm not the question first. Chairperson, yes. Two of my questions will be follow-ups or elaborations on what's been asked already that were on my mind. But the very first one, Chairperson, I must also say that Professor Harrell is still in the hot seat because this annual report was when you were still in charge of it. But also thank you very much for what you did in this couple of years and all the best for the future. Chairperson, we must be serious about the financials of SAA, and for that I want you to bring it to the attention of this committee that since 2002 till this annual report, SAA made, according to the minister, answers on questions by your minister, made losses of 14 billion, and you've also got the debt in 2008 of 17 billion. You wish Transnet bye-bye when you left with a debt of 9 billion. Now, I'm not aware whether that is still on the balance sheet of Transnet. As Maria Ramos told that to the committee last year. And then, over the past 6 years, according to the minister, you received 12 billion from government, in other words, from the taxpayer. Those are the true figures. Now, also, we cannot speak about the profit this year because you wrote off certain deposits for the purchasing of aircraft, and that's just been brought back to the books. So it is not a real commercial profit, it's a net profit. You can't say we moved from a loss to a profit. You're breaking it. Now, my question is it true that SAA still needs an amount to the extent of another 11 billion over years for the turnaround strategy to reach your final aims, your final targets? If not, what is the amount that you still need that you will not make out of profit from government, from the taxpayer? The only really turnover that I can find in this document on page 11 is your passenger turnover. That's the only turnover that you can actually show there. Chairperson, the second question is, and I want to elaborate on what the Honourable Gornoff said here. The former CEO, Mr. Nkula, received 5.3 million in salary per year, per annum, and 68,000 rand retention bonus per month. In total, he received 20 million since his appointment in 2004, and now, of course, this 13 million golden handshake. But my question here is, Chairperson, as I understood, that the investigation is not been finalized yet, and I wrote to your former minister, Brigitte Mabandla, and she answered, we also asked her a couple of questions to the minister, certain things that Mr. Nkula was accused of, and she gave us the promise that she will attend to all those issues and it will be part of the investigation. But what she said in the very last sentence, therefore it is in the public interest to await the outcome of the forensic investigation. Now what we want to know is, this is of public interest, when will it be made available to the public? What were the allegations against the CEO? What decisions were taken to come to the end of a 13 million handshake, and were all the allegations being investigated thoroughly? Chairperson, then thirdly, also what Mango concerns, in your presentation though, that you brought to Parliament today, the word Mango is nowhere in this presentation. Nowhere. I failed to find the word Mango here. And I would just like to know, is Mango totally independent from SAA? If not, how much money, in terms of obligations, in terms of loans, guarantees, or any other allocations, did SAA make to Mango? For what purposes, and what are the details? Chairperson, then my last question. SAA retrenched, in the beginning of this annual report, 1,192 employees, if I got it from the papers. There were at that stage 240 technician vacancies and 53 pilots resigned from it. But still, 72 million were paid out in retention bonuses to 128 top managers. Now, in the beginning of this year, the new minister, Barbara Hogan, and I agree with her there, said that SAA made a lot of sacrifices. But you mentioned all the other sacrifices that you made in your experiences on the flight as well, about your luxuries, about the meals, the snacks and everything. The cost saving is fine. But you referred to the fact that SAA sacrificed because they had to retrench personnel. Little she knew that from that saving, 72 million were paid out in the retention bonus. Not only Mr. Nkulo received 68,000 per month, but another 72 million to other 128 top managers. And on page 75 of your annual report here in front of us, on page 75 I see another 7 million in bonuses and in retention premiums were also paid out to the executives. Despite the fact, as the Honourable Kornoff referred, that you are not in a glamorous position, but still another 7 million has been paid out, taking off the salary. Do you really think this is sound financial practice?
And what do you intend to do? Because you talk about your remuneration committee, to propose to your remuneration committee in the future, when your bonuses and any retention premiums have been paid out, if what targets are reached? Not only when there's a small turnaround of one rand, but certainly we want to see real improvement. What do you intend to propose to that remuneration committee so that we will reach a stage in this committee where we can congratulate you on the bonus and say you did well received it? But up to date, from SCOPA, from this committee, it was the one attack on the other, because we couldn't understand why you paid bonuses on the one hand while performing and managing very poorly on the other hand. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, you know, as the taxpayer, he is the shareholder and he's also your client. Do you do surveys to see what the client wants? And if you do surveys, how do you go about that? Obviously, the customer can't always have what he wants, but to beef up the service. So I would just like to do something. I never read something, anything about a customer survey. And then you have about 7,900 staff members. You said about 2,000 jobs, and obviously those jobs still need to be done. So you obviously also got the use of labor brokers and labor broker staff. And I would like to know what the impact would be as soon as the government of the day now decriminalizes labor broking. What, have you got a strategy in place to deal with that? I know it's not law yet, but it's apparently on the cards. And then I hear you speak with a great passion about something you do. I want to congratulate you and the previous board and then the new incoming board on the work you are doing. And I hope we see you all much more regularly. Thank you.
Honorable Pandal, I'm glad you recognize that there is a process to decriminalize, to criminalize labor brokers, and it's coming from the DA. I have witnesses here that it came from the DA.
He just mentioned what he said.
No, he never said anything. He said it's going to be criminalized.
There's no recording.
There's recording, guys. It's not recording.
By the government of the day. I would have said the ASD.
So, having said that, Honorable Dibla, Honorable.
Let me also join the colleagues in thanking the presenters for the report. Most of my questions have been dealt with. I have got only one question to ask, and it's about the profits that were recorded in the financial year under review. Are they as a result of the reversal payments by the SAA ever?
The 400 million.
Any other question?
No. I think they
covered. Honorable Ajit, is the chair turned or is he left? I think she has left.
She's small, but she has left.
She has left. I couldn't see from here. Honorable Chairperson.
Firstly, I would like to congratulate Sharon. I'll have to learn to call you otherwise.
Cheryl is fine. My mother calls me that, so it should be fine.
Okay. And my question, my first question will flow from the sheriff's appointment. Are we likely to see other board members, new ones? Also to inform you that we have persistently been saying to the minister and DPE, we want to know the skills aggregated within both the race and gender issues. I will add class background also. Because if you take Professor Herman's daughter and put her on the board, and she's a woman, I would say yes, she's female. Yes, he comes from the historically disadvantaged groups, Russian speaking, but he's of an advantaged class, upper middle class, probably.
We all live in help.
A retired professor is a very poor person.
I'm sorry for using you as an example, Prof. So we will really want to, we are very anxious, we have to I'm very happy with your appointment because we know you'll bring, you'll not suffer from what Prof. Herold has been doing with his team. You will add to it, and we know that you perform excellently with our cooperation.
With your cooperation?
Yes, I emphasize, and you know, I want to emphasize that. But how soon will we see the whole configuration of the entire board? Because we then want to go and look whether these things we are asking the minister and DP are being followed through. The other thing is the issue of how strictly does the board adhere to its mandate. I was listening to ICASA this morning as a regulator. You know, I think we do very little as parliament to ensure that people, including parliament itself, adhere strictly to their mandate. ICASA this morning admitted that the research they've been saying they're doing for so many months is actually outside their mandate. And yet they used the research as a reason not to look into the issue of the cost of telephony that is so excessive in terms of interconnection. So we would be teasing you to say, this is our expectation in terms of your mandate. If your board full now, and we are happy with the skills in together with you, around yourself as a chairman. Kimberley is where I come from. I fly at a link, Elling. When it is, when things are going right, FAA does not disown SA Express and SA Elling. When things go wrong, they disown them. I'll tell you what. The air crash in Devon a couple of weeks ago, I now see that in terms of Facebook history, you are shareholder. You have investment in SA Elling. Now, when I saw the report of that crash in Durban, I called the SAA because I know they have a relationship with SAA. I phoned Mr. Babalai, your human resource manager, because there's a SAA number that, because he is a B, that same. I was frantically. Because you see, on the newspaper, the wing shows your logo. It's your logo and then that bird. So what caught my eye, much as I had SAA link, I saw the semblance of SAA logo. And then I said, yes, Babalazi was, as I was calling that. Babalazi, who can I speak to about that crash in Devon? No. It's a totally separate company. You can't phone SAA. So it's typical, it's every day. When things go wrong, there is a tiny wall between SAA and SA Express and SAA Link. But when things go right, the Chinese wall dissipates. So I don't understand. So you because you are part of them in terms of your report, will we be doing anything wrong if we ask you the questions around them? So I'm just saying, I'm pursuing my interest of really separating you where you should be separated and allowing you to continue your partnership. It's not nice when you get shifted from pillar to post when you have a worrying situation you want to address. But then when annual reports are good, you see that these people are one. And when you buy tickets, they are one. When you check in, they are one. But when things go wrong, they're different people. have you assessed the impact? My second question, have you assessed? If not, I would make a recommendation that you do. The measured or measurable and knock-on impact of SAA onto the South African economy generally and onto the GDP specifically. Because, yes, it's nice when the DA says, why do you need a national airline? I say, because it's heritage for my children. And it's nice to see the South African flag carried by SAA landing in 1,000 cities all over the world. But economically, when I want to quantify the importance of SAA in the South African economy, and my children are very figure-wise, I struggle, both from an economic perspective and both from a mathematical
perspective.
I know the impact is phenomenal, so I disagree with the SAA. Yes, there are things that you cannot measure, things like pride that SAA bring us. And I teach my children, and they also know that SAA brings us a lot of pride, hence it is a heritage thing for South Africa. But economically, I need also to be able to know the size of the impact of SAA on the economy itself, virtually or firmly. That's my second question. I also want to say that we might be, if we don't get suitable answers from SAA, I intend as an individual, not as chair of this committee, to knock at the door of the Aviation Authority of South Africa to clarify me why when a plane crashes in Durban, I see the SAA logo. But when I want to ask SAA, I can't ask them. Is it normal? So we will tease out the relationships of yourself and Mango and SAA Express with you. But when we don't find answers or reasonable answers, we will go to the Aviation Authority. They must tell us if we are silly. They must tell me if I'm silly. But my first port of call will be the SAA. And I'll ask until I turn blue. And then when I'm half blue, then I'll go to the Aviation before I die. Research, innovation, manufacturing. The concern that you plan to sell your technical... yes. You don't have a research unit. This thing that I'm happening, this thing to DPE. I say I don't understand why you DEP and individual SOEs are not doing research seriously. Because I think you should be influencing the state to spend on research and development. But you should also lead by example, by doing research yourself, by you must not just wait for opportunities to present themselves, you, especially on the innovation side. During the body break, I said to Mr. Smith, there are airlines that have parked their huge aircraft in the Northern Cape, and I see a market for when the economic downturn improves, that you could be servicing those aircraft for them if they want to refly them, or if they want to dismantle them, you could be having a niche in terms of acquiring the components and you reusing them either to remanufacture other aircraft or to do so many things with those components. I'm not a technical expert in terms of aircraft mechanics. But I know as a human being that there should be a possibility. But if you are not doing research, if you are not serious about innovation, if you are not thinking about manufacturing and you are only thinking about business, which is, it could be that you are not manufacturing yourself, but you could be looking for opportunities where you could partner with people that would be doing manufacturing for certain things to enhance your core function and your capabilities. This is the end of my question. But lastly, why are South African Airways tickets so expensive?
Thank you, Jefferson. You see, they were saying they were looking for the more paying passenger, the higher paying passenger. Firstly, let me welcome Honorable Mangena. We did give you an apology that you were in another meeting and you were double booked, but we're really happy that you finished your meeting, but you still saw it fit to come here. We finished the presentation so
actually,
far.
I said that, Mr. Chair.
Oh,
so I'm not a nice person.
After the dentist, you're still smiling, so there's good dentist. We finished the presentation so far, and we are just in the process of asking questions. Honorable Ajit has just left and come back. She has got to ask questions, but if you have any burning question, we will give you that opportunity also. Honorable Ajit.
Just a couple of questions. FAA is servicing 19 countries in Africa. It's very good. However, your flight to Lagos. Now, I've used FAA, of course, one uses FAA wherever one can. Lately, in the last 2 years, one sees the planes that are being used, the interior of the planes, are really much to be desired. And the last time I had some people from Nigeria coming through to South Africa, they were absolutely complaining. And I was trying to make excuses, but when they actually described to me the state of the plane inside, you can't really excuse what is happening. We need to make sure, because we're flying in Africa, that doesn't mean we have to drop our standards. I know Lagos is a difficult destination, and other countries, but if the same kind of standards we apply in providing for our passengers in terms of the comfort, the seating, the cleanliness of the plane, whatever, wherever else we are traveling, we should have the same standards in for Africa. That's the one thing. And just where Ms. Mentu was talking about research. Now, research, of course, is very costly. What I wanted to know is what relationship, if any, do you have with our research institutions and our university engineering departments? Something else, oh yes. The one issue is that, okay, we are pleased to hear that FAA has broken even. I mean, that's what it actually is. There is no profit. However, my question is that if Cabinet hadn't bailed out SAA when it did, what would the situation of SAA have been? And I'd just like to welcome Cheryl back to us. As well. Another thing, and this is a personal gripe thing that we all gripe in, why do the SAO, is it AXA, always breaking locks on baggage? They don't break the lock, they break the piece that the lock fits into. So the luggage is rendered useless. So I've got about 10 bags lying at home, which I can't use because they've messed up the mechanism. So when you go to AXA, they said they've got all these people guarding and doing this, and every time you get a report that they've got a new lot of people watching the floor and whatever, but it just happened last night. I flew in at the 9 o'clock flight, and I was in Cape Town at something past 12 because of the storm. And there, when I got home, I tried to open it, just opened up, so the bag was open.
Did you have some?
I didn't bother to check. I could, by the time I got home, it was 1:30, and this morning I had to rise early to get him. So I didn't, you know, it goes on and on. I must go home and check.
What do I do about it anyway?
I can tell you what you can do. We believe EXA is coming here after this presentation, so we've got a valid people to ask that to. Are they not coming? There's another committee, but they said if they finish, they might come here. So we'll see if they're coming here.
No, they only told us late afternoon that they're no longer coming. They've got a clash, which is interesting because we asked them 4 weeks ago already to come here and they agreed or gave them this date. However, if they don't come today, we will schedule a special meeting with them and we'll invite SAA to be present in that meeting fairly soon.
Just one last question, Chair. The question of the technical services and the fact that if the report that I'm reading is correct, is that many of our technicians and qualified staff have left. How many there are? Some number of figures standing around. How are we filling the gap? What is the reason for them leaving? Because without a good, well qualified technical staff, you can't really run a well oiled SAA machine.
Thank you. Honorable Bowman, have you got any questions or you? Please continue because we need to give them a time to respond quickly.
I'm just going to be very brief. I'm actually just picking up on the staffing situation. You know, with all the restructuring, I would imagine the morale is pretty low. And I think it is critically important. You've mentioned contracts now being in place, and I would imagine there's a certain stability now amongst the staff. But I think it is very important because a happy staff delivers. I just want to add on here on page 10, where you talk about just at the end of the human resources on the pilot further agreement with SAPA has also been reached on a new approach to determining pilot salary increases going forward to 2010. I would just like a little bit of clarity, an expansion on that and what exactly we are meaning by that. I think also related to that, is there any, do you have any difficulty getting pilots? And what is that resource base? Thanks.
Thank you. I think you've got quite a lot of questions. I'm just going to make it easier for you. So I'm not going to ask you the difficult ones. There's just one outstanding question that comes from the last year's financials and continuing into this year, is that a provision has been made for anti-competitive activities abroad in Europe and America, and what is our status in that? Are we exposed in any way, what is the chances of defending any anti-competitive activities if they so exist? Let's get the answers to the questions and then we'll see if there's any follow-ups, because I think there's quite a lot of questions.
Mm.
And so let's get the answers and then we take it from there. Thank you, Jack. Quite a few questions. I'll go through them in the order that they were asked, if you don't mind. I'll be as brief as I can. If there are any further explanations, I'll be pleased to give them either during the meeting or afterwards. On a loyalty program,
we just wanted to say also, if you feel that you need to give some answers, if you don't have it here, if you want to give it to us in writing or anything, you're also welcome.
That's fine. I think most of them are okay, but there may be one or two that I may have to give more detail to later. On the loyalty program, or what we call the Voyager program, you were requesting, it was Mr. Nana down there, was requesting more clarity on why it's not in the report. The answer to that is that IFRIC 13, which is International Financial Reporting Compliance, I think it is, which is a statement that requires the recognition of the liability for loyalty programs, comes into effect for companies with year ends after the 1st of April this year. So it only affects us in the current year, not the last year. But I can tell you the effect on us will be about $1.3 billion. It will be simply a journal entry. In other words, you create the liability on the one hand and you reduce your equity on the other hand. Now, if you remember the balance sheet we put up there, it showed $2.5 billion as the equity. It will mean that equity will drop to $1.2 billion. But there will be no cash flow effect. I think it's important to understand that. There is a full report on page 19, where it talks us in full detail of that. The IFRIC 13. It doesn't talk about loyalty programs, but it talks about the IFRIC 13 customer loyalty program accounting processes. But it'll be a feature of the current financial year. I don't have at hand, I may have to come back to the impact of how much it costs us per annum. Do you have
it's also reflected on the same note. If you look at note 47, which is on page 91, it shows you what the cost is. In effect, basically, 19 billion miles before breakage and 17 billion miles after breakage. And in terms of the cost per mile, it's 9.37 cents per cost per mile. That is effectively the impact in terms of
But Sam, I think also it probably is worth explaining that that is at full sales value. Generally speaking, the way we manage Voyager, and it is an issue from a public relations point of view, is we try and allow Voyager miles only when the aircraft is going to be empty. So the true cost of the airline is in fact zero because we would have been carrying air, which pays nothing. But that's also been a problem because it's created an access to miles problem and people are not particularly happy with the program. So we are going to change that. It will become more expensive, but not 9.7 cents for every single kilometer. Only for those kilometers where the passengers are physically dislodged, which at this stage doesn't happen. So, you know, loyalty programs are there to draw passengers into to make them loyal to you, but at least possible cost. The accounting statement now requires us to recognize those miles at full average price, which is way beyond what it truly costs. It's a crazy statement, but it's, you know, every airline in the world opposes it, but it is reality. The other important thing is it does not affect the cash flow of the airline. That entry has no impact on the cash flow, therefore has no threat to the airline from a going concern perspective. The Airbus deal, to answer your question in the short, there is obviously a number of the details which are subject to non-disclosure agreements at this point in time, such as pricing and so on. But what I can tell you is that elements of the deal are that we re-signed and recommitted to it after this hiatus during which there was a confusion as to whether the deal was cancelled or not. It is now reinstated. The deal has been increased from 15 to 20 aircraft, which matches the number of aircraft that will go out. In fact, it's one short. We have 21 aircraft that will go out, the 21 737s at the end of their lives. It has been postponed from next year to 2013 through 2015 delivery dates, which gives us breathing space, and it gives us the ability to renew the leases on the 737s for an additional 4 to 5 years. Now, that's significant because the difference in price, and I guess I can give you a sense of what this is because I'm not giving you the prices of either, but I can give you the difference. The difference in price of renewing the 737s is around $100,000 per month per aircraft. Okay. But even then, maybe even a bit more than that. So you're talking about enormous sums that we're saving each month. 21 aircraft times 100,000 is in the region of about, what's it, 20 million per annum? 20 million per month, rand per month, that we're saving by renewing the old leases. The 737s are still in good condition. They're still flying efficiently. They're still of the same generation as the 320s, so it makes an awful amount of sense to do this. It also enables us to avoid the heavy cash flows that would have been really problematic and probably would have required government support on the purchase of the A320s. We call these pre-delivery payments, or PDPs, where you pay up to 25% of the value of the aircraft before it's delivered. So you've got to find this money without getting any return on the aircraft because the aircraft is, in fact, not flying for you yet. Now, that's been postponed for another 2 years as well, which gives us breathing space. In addition, one of the conditions that Airbus imposed on us was to take additional 6 330s, which in fact was an absolute windfall for us, because we have 340-200s, the oldest of the long-haul aircraft, which are going out of the fleet next year. These are the aircraft, if those of you who have flown with us on long-haul, might recall sometimes you fly with an aircraft that has very archaic in-flight entertainment. In the back it has projectors, in the front it has, you've got to turn on your screen at the time the movie starts. You can't select your time of viewing and so on. Some of you may have flown those aircraft. They will be leaving the fleet now, and they'll be replaced by six new A330 aircraft, which are twin-engine versions of the same aircraft, which makes them considerably cheaper to run. And in fact, the strange thing is that we are getting new aircraft for old, but the cost of the new aircraft will be less in overall terms than the old. So it's actually an improvement.
What's the catch for
that's what I'm saying. There's no catch. It's an incredible deal for us. They have these aircraft on the ground, so it works for them. They get these aircraft sold. These are aircraft that were cancelled from other orders because airlines throughout the world are grounding and reducing their networks. So it's a win-win situation, but it's an incredible win for SAA. The whole deal, I think, was it just turned out so well for us. They plan to increase airfares as being predatory. This is a difficult question to answer, Mr. Nana. I think the point is that we are, our mandate is to be a profitable airline. No, our mandate is to be a self-sustaining airline. And the only way to be self-sustaining is to be profitable. So therefore, we have to work within market forces. And it is a reality that when market demand goes up sharply, so does pricing. We don't intend to go out there and rip the public off. We don't intend to go out there and, on a wholesale basis, increase our fares. It's just an interesting point to notice that increasing fares in the airline is quite a long-winded thing. You've got to file your fares with the international fare filing and fare registration process. It's not an easy thing to do. What we do, however, have is this revenue management ability, which you'll know that for every seat that we fly, there are probably 15 or 20 different fares, depending on your circumstances. So if you are prepared to commit to that time of flying, if you're prepared to be away a certain time, in other words, you won't change your time of flying, if you're prepared to take book early, you will get fares that are probably a third of what can be the highest ranging fares. If, however, you want the flexibility of not coming to the airport when your flight is due and getting on the next flight, if you want the flexibility of booking your seat in advance, if you want the flexibility of cancelling your ticket, then you're going to pay a lot more. And that is how we manage our fares. What will happen with the World Cup is we will provide more seats for the higher fare classes, which will mean that people will have to pay more probably. But that will be the same thing not only for us, it will be the same thing for accommodation, it will be the same thing for restaurants. It will be a factor of economic reality, unfortunately. But I can assure you, it's not our intent to go out there and rip the public off or to put South Africa in a bad light. Cabin crew taken to swimming pool, that is unfortunate. It's not intended to be in any way discriminatory, but unfortunately, a lot of our flights do go over water. And it's just not possible to have cabin crew who are not competent to go over water and therefore only scheduled for land-based flights, because it would destroy the efficiency of our rostering systems. So it is a requirement, certainly under South African law and under our own internal regulations, that cabin crew are able to swim. And the reason why that is a requirement is because cabin crew are safety officers primarily. They are not customer service people primarily. They do that as a secondary job. Their primary job is to be safety officers on board. And if we do, heaven forbid, have a sea landing or sea ditching, they are required to be able to swim and draw the passengers back onto life rafts. So that is a requirement. This is a CAA regulation as well. I guess in some way we could contribute by offering swimming lessons or offering some way of bringing in food. So that's possibly a way we could look at that. I can also say that's certainly the regulations throughout the world. And you're probably not aware of this, but I worked in both Kenya Airways and we started up Virgin Nigeria. And exactly the same problems existed in both those countries. And the same complaints came. We're being discriminatory against people who can't swim. But it was a requirement in both those countries too. Mr. Kunoff, no shareholders compact. I think the reason why that wasn't signed is there were issues about the board at the time had serious concerns about the need to recapitalize the company before it was able to commit to the various KPIs, key performance indicators. Everything else has been agreed, and I can assure you, so there was no intention to avoid being measured properly. It was simply a matter of trying to come to terms with the recapitalization issue. The fact that we've done the Airbus deal now has enabled us to swing the balance sheet around by $1.3 billion. So instead of having a balance sheet of slightly over a billion that was threatened by a $1.3 billion entry for IFRIC 13 next year, we now have a balance sheet that's much stronger. And that's why I've been able in the press to say that we don't expect to ask for more money for the airline. Okay, and it also will enable us to sign a shareholders' compact, which I believe the chair has now committed to within the next 3 months. So it will be in next year's annual report that can give you that commitment.
May I just add that, Chair, that the shareholder ministry also accepted that it was difficult for the board to sign the shareholders' compact. I don't want to go back into the history, but when we started the restructuring, we had a corporate plan which is submitted to DPE, which the minister indicated his approval with, but I understand too that the treasury issues, not DPE, that recapitalization didn't take place. I'm glad to see the Honourable Mangana here, because I'm just retiring from chairing a body of which he was the minister, and we once had to go to him, the HSRC, and say, look, the funding in order to achieve what we promised was not forthcoming, and I'm glad to say the minister immediately corrected that. So the shareholder compact is a reciprocal issue. I mean, it's both the body as well as the shareholder that certain obligations in terms of it.
Thank you, Chair. Professor, thank you. Mr. Gordon, the second question you asked was around the break-even, what you mentioned about the break-even. I think this is mentioned a couple of times. If I could just defend a little bit here and say that while I've been very clear right from the initial announcement that the $400 million is not either sustainable because it's a once-off issue, nor is it to do this year, I think it's also fair to say there are a number of other items in there that also aren't to do this year, that also aren't necessarily repeatable. The hedging losses will not be repeated because we'll have a new policy in play that will ensure that's minimized. The $427 million grounding costs for the Airbus will continue this year but will stop at the end of this year. So those items should be considered in the same light. If we're going to consider reversing the $400 million profit, we should also consider reversing the $400 million loss due to the Airbus and the hedging. And if you do that, you come to a figure of about $1.5 billion profit. So we must be fair in what we're looking at. We can't just discard the profit and then count the losses. We must treat like with like. So we'd like to see this at what they call a normalized profit level of $1.5 billion. And then a pure accounting profit through the reconciling items of $400 million profit. But to stick to just the one point of break-even is a little unfair. Okay. The wholesale seller for the family jewels is an interesting one. I don't think the South African Airways technical department, cargo, airships, and Voyager, and Galileo are all support businesses to the airline. It has been a global trend to outsource as much as possible. I know that's a swear word here, but it's certainly an international trend. To concentrate on your core business, the part of the business that you know best and you do the best, and let those people whose business it is to cater, do catering, not yourself. And I think it's the same story with Mango as well. There are two very distinct businesses in this game. There's a full-cost carrier, or first full-service carrier is what we are, and there's a low-cost carrier. You should never mix the two. That's why we allow Mango to run completely separately without interference from SAA and without, and I'll use the word, being tainted by the full-cost model. Because if you do that, you water down the low-cost mentality and it will not work. And it's been proven time and time again internationally. BA failed with Go. They had to sell it off. KLM failed with Buzz. They had to sell it off to Ryanair. It does not work for you to try and run two models in the same management structures. So we've done, we've learned that lesson, and we allowed Mango to run completely separately on its own. As far as the SA Technical is concerned, I was attributed to having said that we would only sell 49%. That's not true. I never said that. I don't know where that came from. We will sell whatever we can, but we will retain a strong interest in SA Technical. And the reason for doing that is, A, it's not a core business. B, it is going to be better run by people who know how to run it properly. And we believe that if we bring in people who have other interests in it, we can bring customer bases with it, we can grow it, we can make it a powerful entity within Africa, because that is its future. But so long as it becomes and is considered as SAA service organization, it's going to be problematic. We'd rather bring in outside strategic shareholders who will give it its own life and allow it to develop and reach its own potential. I don't think this is selling the family jewels. This is allowing a different organization to get involved to make this thing really hum. But we will not get rid of it completely. We'll always have a share in it because I think it's important for us to have a share in our own technical organization.
Major, major share.
A major share, yeah. Look, I don't think we may have to go 51% sold and retain 49%. Maybe that's the only way to realize the value. But certainly we'll retain a major share. And there will be shareholders' agreements that will protect our rights if we become a minority. But look, I'm being a bit unfair. We've not discussed this with the board. So it's just my ideas. Obviously, this will be led by the board. It's a board decision on how much we sell. And, of course, I think it's also a DPE decision as well. Do you want to add anything, Andrew?
We have been working together with SAA on the potential for SAA Technical. There's no doubt in our minds, collectively, in SAA and in government, that the full potential of SAA Technical is not being realized, and it is now serving the full South African industry, which includes COME. And for them, it's a risk, because effectively what they're doing is they're outsourcing maintenance to their competitor. And so there is an opportunity to actually make SAA Technical a South African or Southern African maintenance hub that serves the interests of multiple carriers. And we would like to move SAA Technical in that direction.
Thanks, Andrew. On page 11, you referred to selling non-core assets. That is essentially what we're trying to sell. SAA Technical a share in cargo, sell off airships completely because airlines really shouldn't own their own catering. BA doesn't. Now, most of the airlines in the world don't do that anymore. And
if I could add to that, basically the non-core properties are effectively some of the properties that we've had. For instance, the in-flight services building, not required anymore. We're selling that off. There's some of the aprons that AXA has. We're selling that off. Or that AXA uses. We're selling that too off. And in terms of your question of who do we sell it to, we're basically selling it to, in terms of the requirements per legislation, we have to have offered it to state-owned entities first, and then basically, if we don't have any success on that, we have to sell it out to the external market.
Absolutely. Again, Chairperson, I may just add an indication that, I mean, these are not ad hoc things that come up. This was part of the systematic restructuring plan, because we had to cut on our costs, and we had to look for other means of income as well. So the corporatization of our divisions was one of the aspects in the Seabury restructuring process, and the selling off, for example, of our non-core of our properties that we don't need.
Thanks, Chip. As far as the CEO payment of 14 million is concerned, I'm going to ask Prof to respond to that, but I will say that I think it's been a bit of a misunderstanding. If you go to page 75 of the annual report, what you see is that 13.65 billion includes his salary for the year. Okay, so 4.881 was salary. The retention bonus, Mr. Kunoff, is something that Kaya repaid in full. And that's why you see he was paid 756 for the year until he left, and then he repaid the full 1.337, which includes the previous year's retention bonus. So he repaid it in full. The actual termination benefit was 9.35 billion. I wasn't involved in the negotiation of it, so I'm going to ask Prof if he can deal with the balance of the questions in that regard.
I think I did engage with this committee at the time that it was happening, because you remember there was a cabinet statement, which we were all surprised of, and I think I reported that. Look, between the shareholder and ourselves, when we received those allegations against the former CEO and instigated the forensic investigation, we discussed what then happens to the accused, to use that term. Originally, we thought that the person go on special leave, because obviously you can't have the CEO around if he's being investigated. It soon became clear to us, and I said this was done in full consultation with, in fact, in some ways, at the behest of the shareholder, that the investigation, one had a sense that an investigation happens in a month. It became quite clear to us that this is going to be a long investigation. In fact, it's gone on longer than I anticipated. I was hoping that we'd finish this by the end of the term of the board that I chaired. It's still going on. Cheryl has said, hopefully by the end of the year it'll be concluded. So the question then, what happens to the CEO? You keep him on leave for that long period? At the end, we decided the best would be to negotiate, as the shareholders said to us in that meeting, negotiate a mutually acceptable departure, which we did. And I must just say that was handed over, well, I did the negotiations, but with top labor lawyers. And we're still a country with respect for the law of contracts. And there were particular contracts. We bargained as hard as we could. We like the retention bonus, obviously had to be repaid, and a number of other things we argued and bargained about. And that's the amount that we came to. And I mean, it's been signed off by lawyers. We kept to our contract. It's regrettable, but that's life. We've seen, and as I think I said to the portfolio committee at that time, at that stage we were seeing CEOs of parastatals and public entities in long-drawn court battles with their employees, and we agreed with the shareholder we're not going to go that route. And we said that we'll disclose the amount in our annual, and that has been done.
I think, as I said, while I wasn't involved, what I can say is that the benefit of having been able to take over an inherited company that was not mired down in a horrible fight with the ex-CEO made a huge difference in the ability for us to look forward and fix this airline. So we're eternally grateful to the board for having done that. That is the benefit that people actually don't realize. On the bonus payment, I guess this needs some discussion. A number of questions relate to this retention bonus issue, and it's been a hot number for some time. But I think the most important question is it Ms. Foreman or Ms. Borman? I'm not too sure.
Foreman.
Was about how badly the company was affected from a morale perspective during that period. It was devastating. We were starting to lose some very senior people. We lost a lot of engineers, partly because of their loss in the faith of the company going forward, and partly because they were attracted to much bigger salaries overseas. It's very hard to describe the kind of fear and the kind of downcast feeling you have when you go through this kind of restructure. You have no idea whether you're going to be there tomorrow. Tomorrow, your best mate disappears. The next day, somebody else disappears. It's a bleed. It's a washout that is very difficult to handle. And the airline went through a character depression like I've never seen a company go through. And that is why we had this retention bonus, or retention premium, was to try and lock in people. It was almost, in a way, not a bonus. It wasn't a bonus, in fact. It was a way of contractually locking you in so that you couldn't afford to leave the airline. No, it wasn't, because it was paid monthly. And because if you left, you end up paying 12 months of that amount back. And a lot of people were unable to leave as a result. So we were able to hang on to those people, keep them in the airline. And I think the proof is in the pudding. The loss rate of people who were on retention bonuses was far, far lower than people who were not on retention bonuses. So we kept our best. And if we weren't able to do that, I promise you wouldn't have been able to achieve this, because we were able to retain our best. It will always go down as being possibly something we could have handled differently, handled it better. We could have been more public about it. I realize that. But I can promise you it achieved its objectives. There's not much more I can really add on it other than...
If I may just add to that, because, I mean, it's been a matter which I've spoken to this committee before, too, and it's been a controversy. Point is that, and this happens in companies. Companies going through restructuring internationally, retention attempts. We were losing people. There was an outcry in the press about how we were losing skills. The board decided there should be a retention strategy. Such was it. Now, you've asked questions about the KPMG investigation. One of the allegations was from the union. You know, the allegations mainly came from the union, handed to the minister, handed to me, and we decided to investigate it. One of the allegations was that management is paying itself retention bonuses. So that's part of the KPMG report. As Chris said, it was necessary to do something at retention in the view of the board, so the board took that responsibility. What we did investigate, were there any irregularities in the implementation of that? and that we must await the outcome of the BMG. But the fact that we needed retention, the board was convinced of that we needed to retain skills, just as explained.
Just one correction too, is that this, I think Mr. Kudoff mentioned this was done in the face of a wage freeze. It was only a wage freeze for that particular year, which applied to everybody. In the following year, we paid, I think it was a 7%
increase.
9%. And this year, you paid an 11% increase.
11%
for labor, yeah.
For technical.
And then 9% for labor. Okay, so there have been two increases in since that period. So it's not been a pure wage freeze. In fact, what we did do at the time was we negotiated wage deals with all of the unions, which are agreements that will hold true for 3 years through to 2010. So the wage situation has been stabilised at SAA at good rates, at fair rates, not excessive, but at fair rates. Mango, sorry, you caught me a bit short there when you showed me the 500 figure, but if you look at that figure, that's the director's valuation of the shares. That's not the cost. Look at the previous page. Look at the previous page on page 52 of it. You'll see there's a cost of $336 million there. Now, $336 sounds like an awful amount of money, but the reality is that I go back to my experience at Virgin Nigeria. We started Virgin Nigeria with $50 million, which is more than $336 million, or was. I know that Virgin America started with $190 million and burnt that through in the first year. It's pretty common knowledge. Eric started with $200 million. So it's pretty common knowledge you need around $200 million to start an airline. The $302 million, which is about 1.4 billion rand, starting Mango at 336 was on its bare bones. It wasn't an easy task. We have no loans from or to Mango, and there's no intention at this point. Certainly, we have no reason to believe that we will have to fund it any further. It is profitable. The management of Mango believe that it will remain profitable for the foreseeable future. Advocate du Plessis is on the board. Do you want to add anything to that?
Apart from the fact that if Mr. Kuhnhoff wants to have a look at the composition of the board.
The board composition and what we get paid, etc., is fully set out on page 92. I'm ever so sorry I didn't actually bring the Mango financial statement with me, because Mr. Vasodinot, who is the CEO of Mango, is incredibly proud of their achievements. And to answer the question as to next year's involvement for the World Cup event, I think that Mango is going to play a very important role with transporting fans and supporters and players from one city to the next.
Chairperson, my apologies to all the chairpersons, all three here, for every time butting in. But just about Mango, something that we also should remember just historically. We started Mango as a defensive measure. The so-called legacy airlines were losing market share to the low-cost carriers. And we contemplated the matter, discussed the matter, said we either do nothing and lose further market share, or we go into that market. Listen, Kaushik, you can talk about the success of turning around that loss of market share.
Can we say that, you know, the Mango financials and others can be sent to us in writing so that members have access to it?
In terms of what Professor Gerbel had said, the turnaround was certainly good. I mean, in terms of in an 18-month period, we were the market leaders in terms of market share for the low-cost carrier market. From that perspective, again, it has been profitable. It has turned around in terms of the 18-month period profitable. It has, if you look at the valuations, it will give you some indication of what sort of that performance has been in terms of the profit. Chris, do you want to add more?
No, I think there's a certain, well, I think we can come back to you on whether we can give those accounts. There is a question as to whether we should be disclosing those accounts publicly or not. You know, holding companies are not required by the law to do those disclosures, so we may have to come back to you on that one. I'll discuss it with the chair and see if we can.
Just a point of order, just to make a comment on what you asked. I totally agree with you because Mango is a low-cost carrier of SA. It's part of a public enterprise, and it's a public interest. So I think your request is totally valid.
I think you must qualify that. You know, if you remember the last time when we had the debate with Infraco, Broadband Infraco, we said that the shareholder is not the portfolio committee. The shareholder is the authority and the minister. And if that request has to be made, it has to be made through that direction. It is unfair to ask a company to give that to us, if you remember the discussion. I think we must be consistent with the ruling. And that is why we asked if they would want to give it to us, then that is fine. But if they do not want to give it and want to go through that route, then we must be consistent with our rulings. Thank you.
Can I come back to you on that one? We'll discuss it with you and come back to you.
Can I make a recommendation that we seal it? You want to come back to the Mango issue?
No, I'll come back to you later on.
All right.
Okay, Dr. van Dijk, I think I addressed the issue on the profit. Your first question. Sorry, I beg your pardon. One more question from Mr. Kunoff. Where do you buy the Mango tickets? It's mainly online. They've got an online booking system. But you can buy it at the selected supermarkets.
Checkers, who has never bought Mango tickets?
I was going to say, that's a good embarrassment to see online, and in other words, through the website, and then through a variety of consumer stores, retail stores, which works very effectively. And you can also buy it at the airport. At the airport itself.
Just bear in mind, the idea of a low-cost carrier is to get to market very cheaply, to try and keep your costs of selling much lower than they would normally, which is why you can't buy them through travel agents and through normal distribution channels. Okay, Dr. van Dijk, your next question was, do we still need another 11 billion? This is a matter of some, it's not a simple question. The question is, if this airline was going to become fully balance sheet independent, in other words, it had a balance sheet with the right capital structures, it would need not as much as 11 billion, but it would need a substantial injection. But there are two ways in which you can build a capital base. You can either get an injection, either from government or from outside parties, or you can obtain your profits. And I think the realization that there was no more money coming from government, that there's a falling government collections because of the economic climate, meant that there was a huge stress on the treasury, and that if we were going to get any money, it would come out of the mouths of housing and education and areas that are far more deserving of government money. So we realized that this was not going to happen. The only other way open to us was to start building profitability and making sure we could make those profits, even if we have to increase prices, but in order to make sure that we retain income and we build a capital base. And that is the current plan. The current plan is that we don't intend to go back to government with a begging bowl to ask for more money. We don't intend to ask for recapitalization at this point in time. Okay, that's the intention. I mean, all things being equal, nobody can foretell the future. But given that we've done the restructuring, given that we've trimmed the airline down, given that we're profitable in very difficult circumstances, we believe that it will be possible.
Could I just leave with one wish for my successors? That word bailout will disappear from the public discourse.
Professor, let me give you what our thinking here is. And this is an official thinking. In our last meeting with the Department of Public Enterprises, we accepted a position. If anybody owns a company, even if it's a private company, they put in their own money to make that company viable. So it is a capital injection. It is never referred to a bailout. Mm-hmm. If it was the DA who used the word, not Honorable Ajij, I would have said we stopped. But, you know, since she's in my party, I couldn't be hard on her.
I'm not giving you my chair next time.
No. But I was going to correct her outside and make sure it happened. But since it's a topical issue now, we have accepted, one, And I think that that must be made very clear for everybody to understand. If the press needs to record this, they can record this, nothing else. And they should say this. While we accept that in the DP, in state-owned enterprises, we do not want to make massive profits, but we want to maintain sustainability. So we're not interested in profits for a return, but we want to make profits for sustainable purposes. Two, any amount paid is never a bailout. It is a capital injection because it's taken after a conscious decision of weighing the pros and the cons of making that investment to get the returns that you need. And three, it has nothing untoward about this because even private companies do make investments and capital injections, and then it's not a bailout when the shareholders do that. So I think, rest assured from our side, that is our thinking on this, and we don't have to defend this position.
And including subordinated loans.
Loans, yes.
You must also remember, Mr. Chair, that when you do that, you look at the profitability and the sustainability of it. And a private company would say, if it's going to cost me too much, I declare the company bankrupt. You know, that's why we call it a bailout and not a cash injection. Because you can only inject so much cash, and then you go, you don't have any more.
That is why we say it is taken, the decision is taken after evaluating the pros and the cons, and to see whether this is absolutely necessary in terms of our priorities as a government.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Chuck.
Thanks. The last question, I think, Dr. Van Dijk, is you couldn't find the turnover. It's on page 43. Give us a full breakdown of the turnover there. Under note 6. You mentioned you only find the passenger turnover.
No, I realized the passenger turnover. That's the only turnover, not the financial turnover. I just compared
the
two with each other.
Okay. Are you happy with the...
You are acknowledging
that. Okay. All right. Sorry. The rest of the questions, the retention scheme, the investigation, Mango, I think you've been answered.
On that one, the savings on the retrenchment of the person.
Can we just ask that they just finish and then we'll have a second round?
He didn't answer this one.
Which?
I just want to remind you, on the savings on the retrenchment were converted into retention bonuses for those senior managers. The question was, did you maintain those senior managers or did some of them...
We did indeed. I think I mentioned to you before that the actual retention rate of senior managers who were under the retention scheme was so far higher. I don't have the figures with me. I can give them to you if you wish them. But I think we only lost about 5 or 6 people. Do you know about Vera? I can come back and give you the actual figures. Out of the 127 people, how many we lost. But it was far, far lower than the company average. What I intend to propose to Remco to do in future about bonuses, I think in the future bonuses are important. They're an important part of motivating people. I'm a strong believer in performance-based pay as opposed to hourly-based pay. So providing they're measurable, they're understandable, they're achievable, and that they're demonstrable, then I think it's something that should form part of the future of the airline. Certainly it's something you'll find in the commercial sector or in the private sector. It's a part of remuneration packages in all successful companies. So I don't think we should look at bonuses as being handouts to management. They're a reward system that is extremely effective. And I would propose that we continue doing it. I would certainly propose it to Remco.
Can we just say on that, Transnet has already embarked on that, and they've embarked on negotiations. And it's not considered as a bonus, but it's considered as an alternative remuneration strategy.
Absolutely correct. It's you take your current package and you break it up between performance-based and it's like a salesman. A salesman takes on a commission. That's an effective bonus for performance, is it not? Exactly, that's my point.
You see, can I just get this meeting in order, because we've got Jefferson. I'm going to rule you out of order. We've got a lot of questions here to go through, and I think we must go through it. What we're just trying to do is to give clarity on certain issues, and the clarity on the issues is this. Yes. You cannot give a person a normal salary and then it's a bonus. You get my point. But if you give a performance salary and then you give what based on outcome, then it's an alternative remuneration. And I think that strategy is understood. and it's an alternative remuneration. But the thing is that that requires negotiation for people to understand that system, because when you're used to a particular system and you expect the base and then you expect it's above the base, then you have a problem about how it is. But I'm just saying it is recognized as an alternative remuneration system, and it should be looked at as that. But it requires a lot of negotiation.
I agree entirely, Chair, and I think that's our thinking. Mr. Van Dong, you're asking if we do surveys. We certainly do. There's three forms of surveys that are conducted at SAA. One is we do an internal departmental survey. We are also surveyed by a number of international organizations, the most important of which is Skytrax, based in the UK. And Skytrax have just rated us, or did rate us a little while ago, at number 11 in the world. I think number 11 in the world at 170 airlines is a pretty impressive thing for a little South African airline to achieve.
The point of auditing is that a customer satisfaction survey.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Can I ask, you know, I was surprised at this question. I was going to disallow it for one reason, because when the Department of Public Enterprise made a presentation to us, they did say to us that our Skytrax is done by passengers internationally that evaluate you and give you a rating. But I just let it go. But let's continue quickly.
Yeah. And number 11, literally very well in Middle East.
Checking the attentiveness of the members during the previous.
Mr. Chair, I must just come to my own defense here that the South African customer is the taxpayer. He is also the person that uses that airline. I want to know, is this an African user survey? Not the international one, South African one.
That is why I'm asking if I'm worried about you whether you're flying SAA, because you get at the end of the flight, you get these things to fill up, and if you're a good South African patriotic citizen, you will fill that up to give them feedback. Many people just throw it away.
I'm going to ask my colleague in the very field who conducts the service, who runs the department that does it, if she'd like to add some more to that.
Thank you, Chris. We run the service twice a year. We do it usually February to March, and then September to October. We do it randomly in the sense that we allocate seats beforehand, and so that we don't know who's going to sit there, so we don't know, you know, if you're basically in favor of SA or not. But we use this as a testing, because we have the triangle that we do in terms of the customer service. So we do it internally, and we do it both domestically, regionally, and internationally. And then we take those measures that we've taken and the results, and we compare it then what we get from Skytrax, but also from Star Alliance. Now, Star Alliance is international, but also in terms of even the people from the Star Alliance travel on our domestic network to make sure that, you know, the results tie up. Because it doesn't help that our surveys show that we have 90% satisfaction and someone else shows 75%. And I am glad to say that with the basically percentage of 1 or 2%, we're all, for the last 2-3 years, more or less in alignment with all three surveys. So we are doing it now, so hopefully there will be a survey that you can fill out if you land on that seat, but we do it twice a year and then compare year on year.
I think just to give some numbers, a couple of years back we were down in the late 60s, we improved that to 77%, which is a good improvement but not good enough. The reality is that we've targeted 80, we're not there yet, but we are heading in the right direction. I can also tell you that at a recent strategic session where we set up the vision for 2016, which is an arbitrary year we chose, we're targeting a 90% customer satisfaction level, which would be very, very high. So customer service, I think, or customer perceptions of the airline become an incredibly important part of phase two of the restructuring.
Just because if you're in the aeroplane, you haven't had your luggage damaged yet when you do it up there. It comes only when you get home, when you find this out. So when you buy a car, they phone you at home, they say, are you happy with the car? Did you enjoy the service? And then you say, yes or no. I mean, while I'm buying the car, obviously, I only see the shininess of it.
Mr. Darwin, I agree with you. I had my baggage just fine yesterday as well. I'm leaving in the situation.
I'm going to prevent this from becoming dialogue. Can we just quickly go to the rest of it, please? And this goes to the chair, please. Otherwise, I'm going to... This meeting is not going to finish on time.
The chairman, let me just say, I made a very undemocratic ruling in my 2.5 years into my chairmanship to say board members may not use the board meetings as customer complaint forum.
Yes. Ms. Lentor, your questions. I think if I can leave the one about the board members and the race and the gender issues to the chair.
There's a question there about labour brokers.
What are labour brokers? Okay, sorry, I missed that one out. Yeah, look, labour brokers have been particularly important to us because we have a flexible labour demand. You know, if you look at the number of passenger through flow at the airport, it peaks at about 7 in the morning. It drops to virtually, well, very, very low levels between 9 to 10, 11, 12. It peaks again over lunchtime, drops again in the afternoon to peak in the evening. Now, you can either stop for the highest peak, in which three-quarters of the day you've got people sitting around doing nothing, or you can stop for the lowest point, in which, or the middle point, if you want, in which every time you have a peak, and that's when your business people are traveling, they're going to be understaffed and underserviced. So it becomes a very difficult thing. The answer is to try and find a flexible labour supply, and that's obviously what one gets from labour brokers. Now, I know labour brokers are a problem because, you know, the unions have a very strong point when they say labour brokers are modern slavery. It is something that I think there's definitely a level of exploitation in some labour brokers, not all. So somewhere between now and after 2010, which is when we have agreed with our unions to cease the use of labour brokers, we have to find another way of finding flexible supply of labour, and that we've agreed to do with the unions. We will work with them. We'll find some other way of doing it so that their concerns of exploitation, if you want, are looked after. At the same time, we do get our flexible supply, which makes us more efficient and gives better customer service. Beyond that, I can't really tell you. It'll come with time.
So you have a study?
We do. I mean, certainly do.
Yeah, I just want to ask the question whether you're using, I know we have a second round, but this one I think must be asking. Are you talking about, are you using job placement agencies or are you talking about labor brokers? Because there is a distinction between the two. What are you using actually?
I'm actually talking about flexible labor or labor that is provided to SAA where the employees belong to a different organization but are working as SAA people. For example, we use Quest to provide flexible labour for cabin crew. They have the same conditions of service, but they work for Quest, and they don't work a full-time, and they only work a part-time basis. Likewise, at the airport, we use often use staff that work for Swissport to help us top up when we need more counters open. That's the thing.
That's not labour brokers that you need.
You see, can I just say to you what you need to do, and this is what you need to look at carefully. COSATU is not opposed, and I think that in terms of labor, they're not opposed to flexible working hours, but you remaining the employer.
Mm.
What they're opposed to is a middleman employing somebody, supplying a service to you, and you abdicating responsibility towards that person for a labor that is providing for your service, for which you wash your hands to a third party, which third party is not responsible to the employee. So that amounts to slavery. But if you have a flexible working condition and you remain the employer, that is allowed. And that is what needs to be investigated and looked at. And I think that's a negotiation. We must accept your answer that this is to come and you're negotiating with your union and you'll reach an agreement with them about flexible employment but remaining in the employ of SAA rather than as a third party.
I understand exactly. That's precisely what we're doing. Okay. If I answer your question, Mr. Fidel. Okay. Can I ask if, my new chair, if we could perhaps could address the issue of are we likely to see more board members of different races and genders and so on?
There are not all the spaces on the board have been filled, and it's certainly a conversation which we are discussing with the minister, and it's a question of skills, making sure that we have the right skill set, and here obviously the criteria is what are the kinds of skills that we would want to see, which in part should respond to some of what you say, and then the question of diversity is quite an obvious one, but I'm sure that the full board, you can just send the list of the current people who have been appointed.
You won't appoint my daughter.
Not least of all because I think he's a nice young woman.
There's also other questions there that was asked by Honorable Mentor that the new board is that they would visit us, that there would be a face look at them, that they would explain their mandates and make sure that they're accountable. And then in terms of the working conditions and in terms of the contribution, that they understand that they are accountable to the portfolio committee.
No, I think that's very obvious. As I said, the board convened for the first time yesterday, and we had an induction of DPB and the minister, just explaining the kind of responsibilities. But also, we spent quite a bit of time talking about the culture. And incidentally, one of the things everybody felt very strongly about was the need for us to see Parliament as an important stakeholder in the execution of our duty. Because if we say it's a national carrier, we would want South Africans to feel proud of it. We would also want to feel that what we do is where the public would like us to go. Obviously, that means a mutual engagement to say, how do we run an efficient, profitable airline? Taking into account your questions about, you know, we're not here to make obscene amounts of money. We are here to fund ourselves and to play a role broadly in the objectives of South Africa. But I think that the board would certainly welcome an opportunity to meet the committee. As I stated earlier, for us also Parliament, and I want to address myself to the members of the opposition as well, that we do think we want all parties to actually believe in the future of South African Airways and to contribute towards that future, to make it the kind of carrier that we are proud of and that plays the kind of role in our broader objectives in the country that we would like to see. So we certainly don't hope to see it as something owned by any one party or to become a political football in the politics of the different parties.
Thanks, Chair. On the airlink issue, I stand corrected. Something hadn't actually occurred to us, that we always take responsibility for when they're doing well and we disown them when they're doing badly. It's never been an intention, of course. But I certainly take that as a criticism, and we will. I think the important thing is for us to take responsibility for service levels under any flight that occurs under the SA code. And I'll put out an instruction to my staff that if it's under the SA code, we will take responsibility and we will talk to the airline concerned if it isn't ourselves. It's a very good criticism, and I stand corrected.
Except just what we said earlier in an informal discussion, that we also had to be very sensitive that there is a management there for that company and there is a board for those companies, and that we always had to be sensitive from our side, not usurping responsibility for stuff which is run by another board and another management.
I agree, Prof, and I think you're quite correct. But I think we can deal with the different boards and different managements behind closed doors. We can deal with the politics involved there or the relationships involved there. But it is important for the public, if we are going to be seen to be one carrier, for us to be consistently one carrier. And I agree that's an issue. Next question. The question I've got here is on
the economy. Was the next
that's right, knock on impact on the economy. We haven't done that study. It's a very difficult study to do because there's so many areas and there is a knock on. For example, how many families depend on us? And if we were not there, those families wouldn't spend. And where would they spend that money? What would happen to the supermarkets that they spend on? So there's a huge knock on effect that is immeasurable. I guess it's more important to say that I think the biggest knock on effect will be in the pride and the facilitation that the airline does give. There are a number of areas where the airline plays a huge role. Foreign exchange, if you buy a BA ticket, a very small proportion that is payable to local salaried people, which is small, and to the local airports for the use of the airports, remains in the country. The rest goes offshore. With us, all the profit, all the interest, all the salaries for head office remains here. So there's a number of reasons why I think SA holds a very important part of the economy. We haven't spent time trying to work it out simply because we spend a lot of time trying to fix our core business. Likewise, with the issue of other areas outside of SA, I think somebody else brought up that question. But we've concentrated on fixing our core business and haven't looked at issues like that. It may well be worth looking at. But
Chair,
I can't give you an answer.
Chair, if I can just add to that, the Department of Transport is actually busy with the formal study on the aviation contribution to the economy. And we are contributing to that.
We do research and development, mainly in the area of market research and understanding which routes offer opportunities to us. and where else we can fly our planes profitably. There's a serious amount of research that's done there. But beyond that, and we also do research into brand issues and directions of, you know, market acceptance of new brand ideas and so on, which is normal. For most companies, we'll do that. But beyond that, we don't really do too much research.
Can I just add something there, something that I find very interesting, is the training of our pilots. If you speak to the Defence Force leaders, as it were, they'll tell you that they miss the interaction that was there previously when SAA was just literally a state organisation versus a state-owned enterprise, because they train the pilots in the Air Force, and those are the pilots that feed into the SAA, and it's a continuum, and that, you know, we need to keep that. And the same goes for training our technicians, because it's not, even though you're a very good technician, you need to be able to work on a particular aircraft, and you need to have X amount of hours before you're allowed to work by yourself, etc. All of this is hours based, and if you didn't have a viable commercial airline on which they could train and on which they could hone their skills, we would actually lose that from our base in South Africa, and we'd have to import those skills in the same way as what Emirates is doing. They're going around the world sort of literally poaching pilots and technicians. And I don't know if that's part of the Department of Transport. I think whether it's at education level or whatever, but I think that loss of skill is something that we need to protect within our country.
Absolutely critical point there. And the cost of expats is huge compared to what we pay locally. I knew that because that's how I benefited when I was an expat. So it's a massive difference, and you don't want to get caught in that trap. Ms. Ajish, Lagos flight. The reason with the Lagos flight, why the poor interiors are, they were the old 747s. We brought them back into service to try and recover some of the costs while they were on the ground. It obviously doesn't make a huge amount of sense to completely refurbish them, and they will be going out of the fleet at the end of the year. However, I do take your point. I believe they have deteriorated more than they should have, so we will be taking them off that route fairly soon and replacing them with a much better quality 340s at least. That's a good point. And I know exactly what you mean. I lived in Lagos. The Nigerians do not take kindly to being treated second class. That's for certain.
No one should.
Exactly.
I think the question was broader than, do you, when dealing with Africa, render less quality service? Well, for me was an example. But do you have an attitude? We hope that you don't have an attitude that when you're servicing Africa, then the standard will drop. So I think that is a broader question linked to this question.
Ms. Vandal, I think you're correct. In the past, there was not it wasn't an official position like that, but it tended to be an attitude to put the rubbish on the rubbish, put the older aircraft onto Africa. That's true. But we have very definitely changed that. That was something that was changed by my predecessor, who said this is nonsense. An African is worth every much as what a European is worth, and why are we doing it? And he caused us to consider it very carefully. So there's been a general change. For example, we are busy training and getting, we have a policy to try and put people on board that can speak the languages that we go to. For example, you know, we will try and ensure that every passenger has somebody who can speak to in their own language or in a language they can speak. We are working very hard to improve the safety standards at the airport. We are working very hard to put lounges of the same quality as we have overseas. We'll be opening Lagos very shortly with a brand new lounge that costs us, is about 10 million rand, but of the same standards we have in the UK, for example. Likewise, we're opening lounges, I think, in Lusaka, and there are lounges planned for all of the African points. One of the problems that we face, unfortunately, and this is one that isn't so difficult, isn't so easy to solve, is the fact that the routes in Africa tend to be high-yielding but thin routes. Thin, I mean, not too many passengers. So you're faced with either putting on 3 or 4 frequencies a week or daily frequencies to give more access to travel to the market, but then you put smaller aircraft on. And unfortunately, passengers do not like traveling long distance, 5-6 hours, on small aircraft. And that is a problem we have to face. But generally speaking, I think the quality of the African service is increasing. And I take your point on Lagos. With an old aircraft that we're using, we will change that. What relationships do we have with South Africa's research institutions and engineering universities? Vera, can you answer that?
We have no formal relationships, but we have very recently hooked up with the Department of Science and Technology to see specifically how SA Technical, because there are some innovation that's going on there, so that we can start putting that into the system and also into the economics, because it's obviously that very much interested to use that as a revenue generator also for the economy. So we have started with that process. We have informal relationships in the sense that we sponsor many master's and doctorate degrees with institutions where they do some research, and we sponsor that either through our time, and that's how we contribute.
The question was,
Chair, we do have a more formal relationship through the University of Stellenbosch with the military academy on the west coast at Valdana. I can't for the life of me remember the but that's where they train some of our pilots. Thank you.
The question was, if cabinet is not bailed out, SA, I hope it's the last time I have to use that word, what would happen? We would have ceased to exist. There's no other answer to that. Why does AXA keep breaking locks? It's an interesting technical answer to this, and I've actually seen this with my own eyes. The older belts, as they go into corners, they do this kind of, each plate does that to allow it to go down a corner. And they catch and they snap the locks off. You can see it underneath those corners, with a whole pile of locks. Bongani Maseku, who's the director of operations, is coming here. I think he's probably better equipped to answer that question. He will be coming here shortly from AXA.
I'm not happy. The question was, what would have happened if you would not have received a bailout?
Yeah.
And then we entertained a discussion on, is it correct to use the word bailout? I thought that in response we would say that SAA would have gone under if the shareholder has not done an equity injection.
Correct.
I think we must start correcting it now.
I stand corrected.
That's my point of unhappiness.
I stand corrected. You're quite correct.
I think, you know, it's a very important thing. It's not actually tomato and other things, because it's convenient to be tomato and tomato when you are not a ruling party. I'll tell you this. Because it's easy to throw stones. But it's difficult to implement something. If you're on the coal face delivering something, it's different from just standing aside and criticizing something. It's a big difference in it. When you put a person there and you say, right, okay, give you a chance, let's do it. So one, we must, as you said, you know, in your opening request, is that we must not let this thing happen that we get partial support. We should try to get total support from all political parties and others, and that comes to fundamental patriotism of having a desire to see your country to be the best at where it is. Now, it becomes very difficult to try to be the best in your country where you are when you actually yourself throw the stones all the time. You know, the question that came about is that in SAA, I don't want to say this, but I will say this from a chair, but in SAA, you got the best airline in Africa with the highest amount of accolades that you get in international recognition. It's got a timing situation that is reaching, you know, takeoff and landing in perfect time almost all the time, and it's the most reliable airline. But you have a branding issue within our own people in South Africa, where when they look at it, and if it's South African, it's not good. And there are certain things that contribute to that kind of attitude. Things that contribute to that kind of attitude is, one, the mess that we have with our CEO and other things like this, which creates an enormous image in the eye of a normal person. Then the second thing is, it comes from, it's unpatriotism, where you do not want to give credit where it's due, because it will end up to be a political process of exceeding that somebody did the job well. Now, we believe that what should happen when a level of maturity comes in to politics, you should criticize what needs to be criticized. And I, as the ANC also, if it's wrong, I must stand up here and say, that you must correct now, please. But at the same time, when it's right, we should stand up and say, this is ours, and we're doing it because we want it to be the best. And we find that that kind of common purpose does not exist all the time. And therefore, we have this understanding about how it goes. I just believe that in this year, we have gold. I mean, we have diamonds, but you know, when a diamond is in the ground, you don't see it because it's covered in black. But if you just polish it and you make it shine, you have something that this nation can be proud of, and we need to fix the messes. That investigation that is coming must come out before December. It must complete. It must become in the public eye. We must make sure it doesn't happen again. The next board that comes in must learn lessons from the previous board, sign proper contracts, get a proper social contract. When we sign contracts again, we should have escape clauses that allow us to get out so that we're not paying big handshakes when we're giving up people. Because these are the things that make us look bad in the public eye. Maybe I'm going off tangent.
Can I just add something, though? I do feel that it's very healthy that we see this as an asset, and that the shareholder has a responsibility to make sure that it's adequately capitalized in order to keep growing, in order to function in a very competitive space. But I also do think that we don't want this to be a bottomless pit.
Yes.
But what you can't measure, you can't manage. And that is why I think the shareholders' compact is a very important one. So that everyone, the public, can say, do we think that it's justifiable what we're being asked to do here? So I think it's a balance, but I think it's hopefully part of how we grow in our own management of an incredibly important asset. So I would say, please let us just embrace the responsibility of shareholders to make sure that an asset of yours is adequately capitalized, especially if it's one that's clearly world-class and so on. But similarly, I mean, that asset can't behave as if it is a bottomless pit. And I do think in South Africa, historically, we've had far too many examples where taxpayers' money are being thrown at things that are just bottomless pits. But that's where the shareholders' compact, and I think the pressure from the committee, is very helpful in keeping our feet to the fire to make sure that that is concluded. But as we said, it's a very short-term goal for us to have that. Then I hope we will all be on the same page.
Yeah, but I can just say, I think perhaps that is my parting shot. Every time, and you've actually created the word rather bailout, that we were dripped fat. And it would actually be good, just for my own reputation, if every one of those drip feedings could be explained. The point that we often made to Treasury, I made it myself to the Minister, is that we were asked, when we were appointed, was just after that mess of how much did we lose in that... and then we were actually almost asked to trade ourselves out of a position where we were undercapitalized. You know, if you've got a good balance sheet, you can do certain things.
Mm.
It'd actually be good for an explanation from, when was it, 2004, every bit of this, what it went for. Because I don't think we ever acted as we thought it was a bottomless pit. In fact, I once asked the minister to write me a letter, to write me a letter to say, look, we're not going to give more, because we actually had to deal with staff and things like that.
Thanks. I think just one other thing to add. Thanks very much, both my chairs. I just wanted to add one thing. We are very aware as a company of the power of the brand and the damage to the brand. And we've had a three-phase approach from the brand. We started off saying that it's pointless doing anything to fix the brand until you fix the underlying airline. Because whatever you throw into the brand, it's going to be wasted money. So we fixed it. The second thing we did, we realized that even though you fixed, you're not going to be able to make the brand work until you make your own people believe in the brand.
Yeah.
And there's a huge self-esteem problem, or there has been a self-esteem problem within SAA, because of the amount of a continual attack it gets from the outside, in the press, even from customers that are mishandled. So with a fixed airline, we then set about making or reselling the airline to its own people. And once those people believe in the airline and believe in the future of the airline, become more of something, they become more proud of it, that is the point to go back to the public and rebrand. And that's what we're in the process of doing. Okay. Did I answer your question about the locks? Or certainly, Axel will answer that question. I think. Technical shortage. Why did they leave? They left because of this fear for the future, and because other airlines who didn't have the skills were prepared to pay a whole lot more than we were. Now, what's happened? We've got those skills back now because those airlines are all in desperate trouble. Emirates is in a lot of trouble. The Emirates Airlines, the United Arab Emirates, both of them are in trouble. So they're downsizing now. Those people are coming back home. And we are back to full strength again, partly because of people who return and partly because of hiring new people and training them.
Can you ask Honorable Mangana a follow-up?
No, Chair, I wanted to make a comment on the point that the CEO was making about the brand and about we as a people embracing it and so on. But isn't it a bigger problem than it's a South African problem.
Mm.
We love things that belong to other people a lot.
We disown it.
Yeah. One of the qualifications for coaching the national team is that you should not be able to speak English. So it's not important that the players don't understand. The important thing is that it's from elsewhere. But you'll find it even with clothes, with flying airlines. It's a prestige that I'm flying Air Emirates and I'm not flying SAA. It's an important thing. So you've got to embed yourself in the South African psyche. Unless we change that, we'll probably have SAA struggling through that kind of problem.
Thank you, Honourable.
Good point.
Mr. Van Dalen feels that I give other members, but we don't give them. So let me give him a chance.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm very glad you give me this opportunity, and it hangs on to what you are saying, the tomato, tomato. You know, if you have a problem, you say you have a problem, then you fix the problem. Then you shine up the stone. You don't shine up the stone and then try to hide the problem, you know? So it's a bailout. It's not a cash injection. I have my own opinion about it. Let's agree to disagree about it. Then it's fine.
That is fine. I think that is why we are in the ruling party. Yes. That's why people vote for us. Can continue.
Thank you. Then I think the
people speak.
Mr. Berman? The MAD agreement, you asked the question about the pilots' agreement. They've been changed. The pilots in 1995 negotiated with the management at the time. An agreement which is called a maintenance of parity agreement. Maintenance of parity agreement is an agreement that's quite complex that seeks to put an automatic increase for the pilots each year or whatever period it was actually designed for, based on what the difference between what a pilot earns and a like seniority person in business earns in each of the countries around the world. So, for example, a captain is often compared to a finance director.
Mm-hmm.
So they would look and see what is the difference between a finance director and a captain in the UK, in the US, in Australia, and then they would go and look for, see what finance directors are earning here, and they would apply the same calculation, and whatever that created as a mark, as a change, would become the increase. What we've negotiated is away from these false formula-type increases, because however clever you get when you create a formula for something that should be negotiated, you are always going to find a skew that will occur for some strange reason. In this case, for example, Zimbabwe was included, and the currency movements in Zimbabwe made a mockery of those increases. So what we've done now is we've gone back to collective bargaining as a progressive change over the next couple of years. There's an interim measure which allows for purchase power parity increases based on the local market, and based on the currency change movements for the next 5 years, but after 5 years, it will go to normal collective bargaining. Does that answer your question? I think the last question was provision made for anti-competitive. Maybe we haven't made any provisions. There's been no change year on year. We still treat it as a contingent liability. Contingent liability means that the risk of a liability on actual payment materializing is less than 50%. And at this stage, our attorneys in the UK or in Europe have continued to issue us with an opinion stating that the risk of us being paying any material size fine is less than 50%. So the situation is still there. There is a risk. We don't know which way the European Union is going to move, European Union, I think, is still developing its processes around this area. But we do know that we were a very minor player on the periphery of this particular issue, and that it's unlikely at this point that we're going to be a central accused, if you want. My board member on the right was actually part of the negotiation team. Do you want to add anything to that?
Chair, the thought processes or the evaluation of whether we should provide or actually accrue went as follows. If you know you definitely owe somebody money, then you actually put in an accrual. You raise it. You say debit the expense and you credit the liability. If you know that you probably are going to owe somebody money, but you are not quite sure what the amount is, then you will raise a provision. So you will once again debit your expenses and credit your liabilities, but you don't really know whether it's going to be 100 rand or whether it's going to be 1,000 rand. A contingent liability is raised when somebody has issued you with a notification or a summons, but where you feel that although that you have that demand payment from you, you have a very strong case should you ever go to court. Now, in the European Union, as opposed to the underlying countries, they have a very strict interpretation of cartel behavior. For instance, if you take an example out of a traffic violation, if you drive through a red light in our country, you're immediately guilty of an offense. However, if you write to the prosecuting authority and you explain that you were on your way to the hospital with somebody that was dying from a heart attack, et cetera, they will excuse you and you will probably not be fined. Now, what we are being accused of, or what they are stating that South African Airways has done, is that we have, in terms of their behavior criteria, done or acted in a way that, according to them, makes us part of a cartel. And even if one wants to concede on that basis and say, yes, we were in a particular place on a particular day, there are then certain mitigating circumstances that follow thereafter that obviously will either make that fine that they want to levy null, or make it a administrative type of fine saying, you shouldn't have done that, you should have learned your lesson by now, i.e. therefore $5,000.
I think we accept the position. I'm sorry to cut you short because we're too close.
But that's the thought processes, and that's where we are with the
I think my question is answered in the sense that I just wanted to know that we didn't act improperly. That's all I wanted to know. I understand the process that you can explain it and things. Well, I'm sorry to cut we have to close by 1 o'clock. Unless there's some burning questions here, we'll have to do that. We still have to adopt the last meeting minutes, otherwise we're going to be falling foul of the law also, in that our minutes are not going to be distinct. So if there's some burning question, then I'm going to ask Mr. Nana, is there a burning question?
Well, sir, I'm not sure.
Kauleza, Buzin, Jekka, just ask your question. I'll decide.
I'm not sure if it's burning or not. But Chair, I want to clarify this issue about swimming criteria as an entry requirement.
Okay.
In the airline. Can I just finish, sir, please? I believe if this is part of the criteria, it's discriminatory. The least I could expect from FAA and other airlines is to provide some kind of assistance to kids that are unable to swim. I'm not saying they should lower their standards, but in an event where there is a kid who has got potential and talent to do the job, but because he or she can't swim, I mean, you can't, you know.
I'm just going to make a comment. When I read through this report, and I want to single out one sentence to summarize this report, I must give credit to the acting chairperson. I learned him as a very wise man, and he's giving over to a very wise woman. And in his closing paragraph, he says that the future of this company is to ensure that the airline is profitable on a sustainable basis. Mm-hmm. Once we have that philosophy and vision given to the new board, mm-hmm. I think we mm-hmm. can all agree with you and say, let's go. Mm-hmm. My second point, we are legislators. We haven't discussed it today. But in your report, you haven't complied with certain sections of the PSMA. And in the next time that you appear before the committee, I hope the board will give direction to the management to make sure there is full compliance with the PSMA. It will be a bad situation in the next round that you appear before this committee and there's still no compliance with PSMA, not only with contracts, legacy contracts and arrangements, but also on your procurement systems. And lastly, what the CEO has said, your shareholders' compact, it must be in place. I just want to plead that the new board directs the management to look at the compliance of PSMA.
Thank you, Chair. I think Mr. Kuhn has stolen my words. But lastly, let me just also want to congratulate FAA for the unqualified audit opinion.
Honorable Chair, Members of Parliament, I want to just conclude by saying that we really want to make SAA to be an airline which earns on a daily basis the respect of all South Africans and the world, where SAA becomes the airline of choice for people to fly around inside South Africa as well as in and out of South Africa. And something which I said to the minister, and I was contemplating whether I should do it here, but I think I'm just going to say it as well. Government and we as the public are the principal or the only shareholder of this airline. And I want to take the Honorable Mangena and various people's points about how we as South Africans must actually own those things that we own. And I had said to the minister, I really want to see every cabinet member flying South African Airways. I'm happy to accept that there may well be reasons why they don't, and they must talk to us about it. They must become our first point of reference as a focus group. I want to extend that to the members of Parliament, that in fact, I really want to ask, as a custodian of this asset, that we believe in our own asset. It's a bit like if Raymond Ackerman goes shopping regularly at Checkers. You know? I mean, I really hope that we can get to a point where we will, without any issue of feeling like we are sacrificing or suffering or doing it because it's the right thing to do. I want every cabinet minister, every member of parliament, every employee, as South Africa Inc., to start there. I've already started to talk to some members of corporate South Africa to say that to whatever the reasons are, tell me why you are not flying SAA. And I promise you, we will fix them because we want you on the national carrier. So I just want to conclude with that. We want to be that pride and joy.
Thank you very much. I'm going to give my chairperson here 1 minute before I give my closing speech. I prepared a speech, you know. Not often I'm going to chair.
Actually, in terms of protocol, you know that I should speak last, so you better make your speech and give me my chair back.
Okay.
But I'll forgive you because you're learning the ropes. Okay, let me do my closing remarks, then hand over to you. No, thanks. I think we are, as I said, we are excited about the kind of report that is before us. And I know even Minister Van Dalen and Minister... Sorry, I've just promoted. It's a sign of good things to happen. No, but I meant Minister of the Church, you know. But I know that you two should be happy. There would be something very wrong with you, with all of us, anyone that would not be happy with the kind of results that SAA has put before the nation and all of us and Parliament today. But there are four issues that I feel strongly that I should still raise. Look into the possibility of leasing some so-called non-comp assets. I don't know why you outrightly sell them. You could, why have you never opted for leasing? Because what is non-core today might be a core in the next 20 years. Yes. Cartel behavior in Europe brings me back to the point of research. There is an SOE that is in progress, several ones in India. Because you don't even research the market before you go into it. You should have known that certain behavior in Europe can easily be seen to be cartel behavior. You can't just claim that in your own South African standards, what is normal in South Africa is abnormal in Europe. That's why, so I would still urge for, even if it's a skeletal in-house research unit, that would sometimes commission research when it's huge or to other research institutions. You can't enter the market blindly. My other point, which Ms. Honorable, the issue of the brand. You know, even in a household, in a family household, as parents, you say you don't drag the mentor name into disrepute with your behavior out there. I it boggles my mind how you give your brand so easily to other airlines. I mean, your brand is either directly or indirectly on SA Express, which you sometimes say it's not yours, SAA Link, which you sometimes say it's not, when things go wrong. So I think we need a discussion on your brand, because the South Africans are confused about the brand issue of SAA. And I myself, I'm confused, and I'm sharing this portfolio. I'm often confused. So I think we need a bit of... My last point is on innovation. I don't think that you can just tell us that you're not thinking innovation. Other things you will not do yourself, but you will realize that I probably need a better communication system for the airline. I'm not a communication company. I'm not an IT company, but I need it. I can talk to a communication IT company to say, if you do this for us, can I go into partnership with you, and therefore you install this communication devices in my aircraft at a lower rate, because firstly it's my idea. Secondly, we'll be doing this into partnership. So we would be wanting to see you moving on an innovation path quite strongly, even if you don't do the innovation, but at least thinking about the things that you need as an airline that you can partner with, or that you can solicit you taking the initiative and being party to those kind of things. I spoke too much. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Let me close by saying, you know, the first thing first we needed to say to Professor Jake Scovell, you know, as this portfolio committee, this country, and our people, we owe you a debt of gratitude. And you will, you know, these are words that we just say like that. Protocol says I shouldn't have said this in the start, because then I'm saying goodbye to you even before the meeting is finished. I'm supposed to say to you the end. But we don't want to say goodbye, because we do not believe that it's ever goodbye to a patriot. It's never goodbye to a patriot, because you and I, we know, and our country knows, that you have got more use for you in this country, and that you will always be here for us. But to take an airline during a time of a crisis, to have the vision to restructure it, to decide on going in a very difficult time, and to have the vision to bring it to where it is today and hand it over as a going concern from a very precarious state, we must say we owe you a debt of gratitude. And that we say that very sincerely, and we say that honestly, and we know that you worked. We know that you had challenges within the management and within the structures, but you have overcome that, and you've brought us to where it is. And we want to say thank you to you sincerely from all the portfolio here and the country at large.
Thank you very much.
having said that, we want to say, I have to take a photograph, you know. Cheryl, now my wife, if I say to my wife, I met Cheryl today, she was going to say, she won't believe me, you know. But we wanted to say, welcome to you, to the board. I don't have to say this, I know it for the fact that we know with your vision, your thinking, and your capacity, your capability, and your patriotism, we know that you would have this country's interest at heart, this government's interest at heart, and you'll take this airline to where it needs to be. You have shown this, you have done this in other places where you have been, and we have utmost confidence for you. What we wanted to say to you is our door in Parliament is always open to you, and if we need something from our side, please feel free to come to us. We want to request that for 2010, do us proud, make it happen. I heard what you say that we have to make some profit at this time, but just remember, if you look at what the Chinese did during the Olympic Games, it was a marketing exercise for them to go to where they wanted to do because they wanted people to come there, they wanted people to see what it was like so that they will come there again and make it happen again. So it's not about this, and it's not just about making profit. It's showing our airline in that way. We want to say we have heard you here. There were two things that you asked us to do, maybe not directly, but we heard you. One is that we have to engage with our political side of things for the liberalization of the airlines in Africa, so that the doors open for us in other countries in Africa, and that it should be a conscious thing that when we're going out and trying to build relationships that we think about opening the doors for you. We said the second thing, that to talk to the Department of Defense to reinstate the training of pilots again, such that there is a relationship between pilots coming out of SAA so that they can go to, pilots coming out from the Defense Force so that they can seamlessly move to SAA. And I think, I'm sure my chairperson here will take that through. I'm confident of it, and it will be done. Then I want to thank you all for coming here today. Thank all the board members. I'm going to ask you all to leave because the board members, the committee members need to stay because we have to just adopt a minute.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And we will be back with a photo.
I'll get it done.
No, but you must send my greetings.
No, really, really.
It's nice to see everyone.
Mr. Patel said we're going to ask you guys to just leave quickly because we want to get out of here. Take care. You want to go?
One
second. We have two sets of minutes and program. Take these people out so that we can continue. Professor, that this meeting is now reconvened again. We have three items that we need to look at. One, we have to adopt two sets of minutes, otherwise we'll be falling behind in the adoption of those minutes. And then we have to adopt the program for the public enterprises because there were certain changes. This was emailed to most people the program was emailed to most people, and at the last meeting we gave the minutes to everybody. To all people. So I'm going to ask our chairperson here to just go through the program, and if there's any clarity or questions that comes out of it so that we can ask about it, and if necessary, and if when we did that, we adopted.
No, to save time, I think people should have gone through the program when it was emailed, yes. So I don't even need to speak to you.
Is there any proposal for this program?
Or recommendation for it?
Okay. First, we should start off. Is there any changes that people want in this program?
It's not a change, Shabazin, except just to say, it looks like on the 10th to the 14th we'll be visiting Or Tambo and Cape Town International. I don't know what the chairperson has in her plans, but can I suggest that in the light of what came out of today's meeting, that there is a need for the new board to be introduced to the to the committee. We do that either in Johannesburg or when we're in Cape Town. Either than that, I move for the adoption of this schedule.
I think it's a good suggestion. I think it can be, and it can be accommodated carefully. So, proposed by Honorable Nana, seconded by Honorable Mangena. Finish. Right. We have the minutes of the 10th of September that is in front of us. Is there any proposed changes or amendments to this minute? Can I have a proposal, please? Honorable Ajiz is proposing.
You are chairing, sir.
And Doctor seconded it. So it's adopted.
There are six doctors, Dr.
Pandey. Dr.
Pandey,
okay.
And I'm in the
We have the minutes of the 15th of September, which was a
joint meeting.
No, just not. We have the meetings of the 15th of September. Is there any proposed amendments or changes? Honorable Nana?
I don't have a concrete proposal, but if you look at page 2, 2.1, it says concerns raised, and only two issues are captured by the secretary.
What were the other issues?
I can't recall them off on top of my head.
This was a summary of the issues as far as I can remember.
That's a summary of issues.
It boils down to these two, just as far as I can remember.
I withdraw, sir.
So is there a proposal for this? Honorable Van Dalen? Van Dijk. And seconded by Honorable Jesus.
Can I brief the committee on two things?
Please do.
One, ESCOM announced publicly today at 10 o'clock the amounts they have percentage they have applied for.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What was it?
I was not listening. No, they were calling a press conference at 10. On national at 10, I was sitting here. Yes.
Okay, but you already know what it is, obviously.
I wouldn't tell you.
I know.
What did they change last night?
Reading the media about it.
Of course, it's quite sizable. I think it's going to be within the margin of 45 to 60%.
Will we expect that?
Yeah. That's the first thing. I've been engaging the minister, myself and Dr. I've given him homework on Infraco, emanating from the arguments by ICASA and the minister when we invited them, that the law intended Infraco to have one license. We disputed that, we took the act and put it to them, and I've been having an engagement with them, and I'm intending to bring them back to the committee together with the Department of Communication, because they actually erred in terms of the how they interpreted the so because our program is full, if we have time, I'll bring them back just before we rise, in mid-December, early December, or the first week of committee week, early in the year. So I just needed to inform you that there is a lot of engagement going on the Infraco thing. I've also written to them to say, when is the first license coming? Because in that meeting, they said that by end of September, and it is October. They've not yet replied. I intend writing a very a stronger letter.
Well, we can comment on all this.
Yes, maybe I should CC you the letter that I've been writing to them.
Jefferson, can I just, because you will remember that they gave us a program on which day it will be announced. So ESCOM actually jumped the gun and now make the percentage available. You will remember that the chairperson of NASA said, when we asked what is the percentage, he said it will be made available, I think, in November. Mm-hmm. And then he will also tell all political parties when they can comment.
Mm-hmm.
You remember? So we will still get that from NASA.
No, no, sir, they are doing it together. They've agreed together to release it today.
Yeah.
It's an internal arrangement because they are coming to Parliament, sparked a lot of people. And somebody which I suspect is linked to you leaks the figures.
Yeah, no, I've got many people that I know.
I want to use my prerogative as chair. I want to say, honorable members, it has been a privilege and an honor for me to chair this meeting. If I made any mistakes, I apologize for that. I never intended to. I hope it was good, and I want to thank you all for attending and cooperating and making the meeting a success. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I was nervous last night because it was long. You guys had a long time in the New Year.
That's what
I'm right there. Wait, man. No, not today. I was with today. Sorry.
Okay, I've got the hard copy, but not the electronic copy. The secretary found that if you can just email me or as well as the production of the minutes and the program as well. Because I also have copies where he didn't have any, because he already handed it out to members. But he said that in the middle of the meeting, the sound, the audio equipment is malfunctioning, it's not working. I took everything in my hand, and I called the recording, and then when someone came and fixed it, and I just dropped it. I don't know if it was two or one, or one, but both have that one.
You read it there, and you turn it over, you read it there, it's really upside down for us.